Good evening. Good evening and welcome to tonight's council meeting. My name is Paula Reed, Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome you all here this evening on Monday the 6th of May 2024. Welcome to those people who are in the public gallery, some very familiar faces. Welcome. The time being 5:30pm, I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started. Yep. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reed, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the Chief Financial... you've been downgraded. But the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Dave Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Reeve, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms. Shakuti, Manager of Development Services, Ms. Tyler Moore, our Team Leader, Statutory Planning, Mr. Donovan, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs. Morton. We have no apologies this evening. We're on page one, confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting No. 7 held on the 15th of April 2024 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in the Deputy Mayor. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. We're now on page two, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop on the 22nd of April in relation to the budget and fees and charges, and on the 29th of April in relation to the Margate Master Plan. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? No, thank you. Does any councillor wish to move an item from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. And that takes us to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? Thank you. Even though we know who you are, we'd ask that you state your name and the suburb that you live in as you start your question, please, Mr. Grace. Oh, just hang on. We'll just get you started, otherwise it won't record it.
Good evening. My name's David Grace. I'm an ex-councillor, for those that don't know. Spent 22 years sitting around this table. I had much pleasure in it, by the way. Firstly, Mayor, if I may, I'd like to acknowledge our new General Manager, wish him well in your task with us down here. You'll find we're not so bad after all. We're a pretty good community down here, and your family and yourself, I hope you fit in and enjoy your stay with us. I'm sure you won't hear my name only once. You're going to hear it many, many times. But what I'm here for, to ask some questions, not make us speak. But firstly, Mayor, if I may too, I'd like to talk about a policy that I feel council should investigate, and that's advictories, the deaths of people. I'm ashamed and saddened that we didn't recognise some of our long-serving staff over 30 years' service to this council, and we have not acknowledged their passing. One I mention is Janice Higgins from Bruny Island, for your record. And the other one, Mayor, is Tony Lynch, our plumbing inspector, was also. And if I've missed somebody in between, I'm very sorry, but this is one of the reasons that brought me up here tonight. And I hope, Mayor, that Council may look at a policy. I don't think we've got a policy. I can't remember one. We just used to mention it if we were allowed by the mayor at the time.
Yep.
People passed.
Thank you. No, we don't have a policy in relation to that. I rely on being provided that information because obviously I've not been here as long as others. So if information is passed on to me about particular members of staff or former councillors that have sadly passed away, then I'm always keen to, of course, acknowledge their contributions. But certainly I'll have a chat to our CEO about ensuring that we are made aware of that information and we can pass on our condolences to their families.
Thank you very much for that. I think it's great. Right, my first question's a pretty simple one. Trade in Purple. How much money have this council had back from the old high school development from Trade in Purple in cash?
Yeah, I'll ask the Director of People and Finance, Mr. Spinks, to answer that.
Right.
Thank you, Mayor. So in relation to the stage that's been completed to date, we've received, through a combination of the land sale plus our share of the revenue share arrangements, just a fraction over $3 million.
I didn't understand that, but no doubt you'll answer that.
So he indicated that we've received so far around $3 million.
Yeah.
And that is obviously not the final amount because there are still several stages of the development to go.
And to date, what has council spent of the ratepayers' money?
Mr. Spinks.
Mr. Spinks, is it? Right. I did send through KC a questionnaire about that. I got a reply from Mr. Spinks, which I wasn't very happy with. The language in that didn't feel appropriate for a ratepayer, and it was very insulting after serving 22 years as a councillor to get something like, I can't read it, it's the words you used, but it wasn't all that nice. When we ask questions...
Sorry, Mr. Grace, do you wish to make a complaint about that? Because I would not like to see a member of our staff have that sort of accusation levelled against him without the opportunity to actually
Mayor,
provide some response.
What am I supposed to do, though, when I get an answer to say, unfortunately, obligations, resources, something, we do not have the time or capacity to undertake an analysis of my questions? I'm sorry, Mr. Spinks, but I sort of took it because under the Local Government Act I'm quite entitled. If you're not prepared to give, or if any questions that I'm unable, and I don't want to waste council staff's time, by the way, I'm mindful of that. But I asked them because I have phone calls every week from ratepayers, even though I'm retired. Anyway, I don't want to dwell on that because I've just asked two of those questions again tonight. One was the wetlands and Trade in Purple was the other one. Thank you. The other question I have, is that clear with that, Mayor? I'm sorry if I on your foot, but this council in my time on council wastes too much time. Instead of answering the questions that people raise to them, they turn around and give you some information, you've got to come back 10 times, and that's where the time's wasted.
I think
anyway.
So. Okay. If we could move on to the next question,
yes,
that
I will.
Would be great. Thank you.
This council aims to be very, very efficient with how we treat our environment, meaning our waterways, etc. Well, my question is, Mayor, in the Capital Works program, we allocate a certain amount of money each year to clean out what we call side entry pits or gully pits on our curb and gutter in each street. I think most of you would understand what they are. They are a collection for the water. Mm-hmm. In my street, where I live, I sent a photo 2 years ago, and they're still not cleaned out. Now, when we get heavy rain, all that debris ends up down on our beach. So my question is, who polices that work? Because it should be supervised or looked at on a regular basis.
Yep. Mr. Reeve, could you assist us with that one, please?
Through you, Mayor, the allocation you're talking about is not through our capital works, it's through our operational expenditure. So there's a certain amount we put aside there for cleaning pits and cleaning waterways and other like things. We have a set of service levels that actually governs when we do clean those pits. So what would normally happen, which is probably what actually happened in this case, is you've actually put a request in, it's gone to our customer service area, and then that would go up to our depot, who would then assess as to whether or not that meets the service level standard or not. If it does, then they would be cleaning the pit out, and if it doesn't, then they probably wouldn't, and they probably may go back and monitor it afterwards, and that's the process with it. If you feel like you feel like it still needs to be looked at, you certainly can put in another customer service request for it.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, okay, I understand that. 2 years ago, though. Anyway, enough said on that. Mayor, the other question I had was... I spoke to you and I raised with council many times, and this Liberal government are out every day saying, well, we're here to build affordable housing and we're here to do this and we're here to do that, but nothing ever seems to happen because for 2 years... or more than that, because this particular land at Snug came before this council back in 20, 30 years ago, Pitt's property in Snug. Council had half of it zoned residential, so that it could be built, but the top half was zoned residential something, I can't think now what it was, but you're not allowed to build a house on it. It has to be rezoned. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I spoke to you about that some time ago, and you said that every opportunity you would get, you would raise it with any members of the government to come and talk to you. Mayor, nothing seems to be happening, and people are crying out for homes down there at Snug. And I'm just anxious to know, and the question will be, is this government fair dinkum, or are they just going to lead us on until the public say enough's enough again, or are we going to get some action?
Well, obviously I can't speak on behalf of the state government, but certainly, excuse me, I'm aware of the issue that you've raised previously, and as you would know from your time on council, we still have not translated to the statewide planning scheme at Kingborough. We've been waiting over 4 years now for our assessment to go through for that. And also there have been some issues with trying to get the urban growth boundary extended as well. So there have been some delays, and I would hope now with the appointment of a new planning and new housing minister, both of those portfolios are now held by the same person, Minister Ellis. I would hope that there would be some greater focus on how they can actually speed things up now.
Well, I thank you for that, because your planner here, Daniel, is it?
Mr. Stander. Mr. Stander.
Yes, he's been... doing all he can for us, and I appreciate that, and I don't want to be tormenting him every day.
Yep. No, I can assure you that we've been in active discussions with the State Planning Office to try and move these things along, but the wheels of government sometimes move slowly.
Yeah. And just finishing with this Mr. Spinks' stuff, look, can you look at that? Because when we do raise questions, Madam Mayor, Come on, we don't want to have to, you know, that's what makes the old blood pressure tickle.
Thank you, I will do that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Grace.
Have a good meeting.
Thank you. Any further questions? Good evening.
Good evening, Charles Biggins, Leslie Vile. I have some questions regarding Council's environmental regulations. In 2022, Council staff nominated 21,000 hectares of, or 30% of Kingborough for landscape conservation zoning. And they also revised the Council's biodiversity offset policy to include potential habitat, and drafted the trees on private land bylaw, the most ambitious LCZ targets in the state, the most expensive biodiversity offset values with the broadest definitions in the state, and the most restrictive environmental permit system with the heaviest penalties in the state. Viewed separately, they have raised many concerns. Viewed collectively, they raise even more. Are the landholders, the body corporate membership, expected to believe that these three environmental benchmarks are not related, that they weren't developed by Council's own staff to form an environmental regulatory grid, a grid that will make the day-to-day vegetation management of bushland areas a bureaucratic nightmare?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question. There's a few elements here, not all within my area. Certainly no, the three are not tied together for some ulterior motive or blocking it. The LCZ matters need to follow the requirements of the state government. The draft has been put together and sent to the Tasmanian Planning Commission in 2019. As has been mentioned in the Chamber many times, we have done a revision of that and provided that revision to the TPC, and we still await response from them about appropriate zoning. So they're not directly related to the biodiversity offset or the penalties that are referred to, and penalties are set by the state government in LUPA if they're the penalties you're referring to. So that's the same across the state. And we look forward to getting the response from the TPC and then being able to go to public exhibition about the zoning within the municipality.
The UN, the United Nations, through their environmental program and their sustainable development goals, have been negotiating international biodiversity conservation targets since 2011. These were formally ratified by the Australian government at a biodiversity conference in 2022. Notably, one of the targets agreed upon was the restoration and conservation of 30% of the world's freehold land by the year 2030. At the numerous closed-door workshops held by Council over the past 10 years, have Council's own in-house experts or guest subject matter experts explain to the elected councillors, the directors of the body corporate, that Kingborough was aligning itself with these UN sustainability targets, and this municipality's private landholders would be the guinea pigs in what is essentially a 21,000 hectare private property land conservation reserve?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, at no time ever through the Land Use Planning and the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act have we aligned or made any references to UN targets.
As a direct result of Australia's ratification of the UN Global Biodiversity Framework in 2022, the federal government passed the Nature Repair Market Bill in December 2023. This Act of Parliament is the head of authority for a national biodiversity credit trading scheme, similar to the existing Australian Carbon Credit Unit scheme, and both will be administered by the Clean Energy Regulator to approve and certify biodiversity protection projects aimed at meeting the 30% targets of the UN Global Biodiversity Framework by the year 2030. Private companies have already been operating in this space. Each credit is based on the costs associated with restoration and conservation of 1 hectare of freehold land. Yet more private companies operate as auditors of biodiversity projects, similar to the Australian Carbon Credit Unit Scheme. These private companies will seek a commercial licence from the government's clean energy regulator when they become available. Was Council's inclusion of per hectare rates and potential habitat in the biodiversity offset policy and the use of the term preferred landscape values when referring to LCZ nominated land just more examples of Council aligning their environmental regulatory grid with the prerequisites for a nature repair market? And will the biodiversity credits created under the authority of this federal act be recognised as on-site or off-site biodiversity offsets under the Kingborough's interim planning scheme and the proposed trees on private land bylaw?
Ms. Tylermore.
Through you, Mayor, there's absolutely no link whatsoever of the planning scheme, the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act, to any credit trading scheme or carbon credits. There's no link. We've never heard anything from the state government intending to do it, and certainly Kingborough has not taken any action to link those together.
I'll repeat the last part of the question then. Will the biodiversity credits created under the authority of this federal act be recognised as on-site or off-site biodiversity offsets under Kingborough's interim planning scheme the proposed trees on private land bylaw?
Ms. Tylermore.
Through you, Mayor, as I said, there's no link at all about credit trading scheme or carbon credits through the planning scheme, through planning permits or conditions on planning permits. So no, there's no direct link to it, and it can't be connected. Unless there is some federal change at some point, there's no connection now, and it's certainly not a driver for decision making for land use planning.
Using Council's current offset rate ratio value of 5-1 for high priority biodiversity values at $68,250 per hectare as being representative of the average biodiversity value across the entire 21,000 hectares of freehold land nominated for LCZ within Kingborough, sitting between the 81,900 hectare rate and the 40,950 rate, giving a back of the envelope biodiversity estimation for the 21,000 hectares of LCZ nomination to be in the order of $1.4 billion. Australia's total nature repair market has been estimated by Price, Waterhouse and Coopers to be worth $137 billion, which would put that estimate for Kingborough at 1% of the national total. What is Council's estimation for the monetary value of the biodiversity contained within Kingborough's nomination for LCZ, the 21,000 hectares, that could be converted to a tradable biodiversity credits?
Ms. Tylermore.
Through you, Mayor, the notion that the LCZ is put there so that people can use carbon credits or credit trading schemes just doesn't make sense. The intent is to look at land use planning and balance the different parts of the scheme or the different values of the scheme and the municipality with vegetated areas. It's not intended that they would all be removed or that they would be locked up. And as I've already answered in two of your other questions, there is no link between them, and certainly there is no aspiration to have this as a business where we're creating billions of dollars from our landholders. There's just not a correlation.
Where there is money, there's commercial opportunity for private sector brokers, project developers, market advisors, credit traders, legal and IT services, biodiversity consultants and auditors. Given Kingborough's apparent expertise in assessing biodiversity values, Has council or individual council staff ever been approached by any of these interested parties regarding services council could provide the biodiversity carbon trading industry and information on suitable freehold land in this municipality that could be harvested for biodiversity credits under the national, under the nature repair market framework?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, obviously I only speak from one area, but I'm not aware of any inquiries that we've had related to that.
In my submission to the Tasmanian Planning Commission hearing in September last year regarding the inclusion of Kingborough's revised biodiversity offset policy into the interim planning scheme, I drew the Commissioner's attention to the potential conflicts between the federal government and council regarding who would hold the rights to harvest retrospective biodiversity credits from land already placed into a conservation covenant as a result of a Council Part 5 agreement. This was outside the scope of the TPC to adjudicate on at the hearing, but they did include this and other unanswered questions regarding Council's scope of powers and head of authority in their final report to Council February this year. Has Council had sufficient time now to digest the full implications of the unanswered questions regarding potential conflicts between the federal government and local council and whether such a conflict would prejudice private land already in Part 5 Conservation Covenant from being eligible as a nature repair market participant?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, without reading the detail of the from the TPC again, I'm not. It's not springing to mind that particular section, but obviously they said that there wasn't relevant to their consideration, and for the reasons that I've already stated, I don't think it's a relevant consideration for council to turn their mind to it either at this point in time. And there's no direction and no legally binding connection between the two.
They both rely upon conservation covenants being placed across land. So I'm. Let's just assume you can't put two conservation covenants across the same piece of land. So that's where the area of conflict arises. Are people that are signing on to a Part 5 agreement being made aware that they may be signing away the ability to harvest biodiversity credits in the future?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, I better understand your question now. Essentially, you're asking, can they double dip? I don't have the answer to that. When we'd most likely need to get legal advice about that. We would unlikely go down getting legal advice and spending money on that until we actually need to, until it presents itself, because I suspect there's probably quite a legal answer around that. If a Part 5 agreement is registered on a title, the land is bound by that. And they need to meet those obligations. Whether that can count as an offset under carbon credits is beyond my knowledge and not something we've ever had to deal with. And our primary interest would be that conservation covenant under a Part 5 agreement, should it be applied, is upheld, adhered to, kept in place. Whether there's other sort of theoretical offsets, if you like, because that's what it is, it's not locking it up separately, is unknown, and we would need to cross that bridge when we came to it, but I don't see it as something worth investing in at this time until we have to deal with it.
The nature repair market could bring significant economic and environmental gains to this municipality and may help to sway public opinion towards some of the measures introduced by the council. However, Council needs to be very clear about the role that they intend to play in the biodiversity and carbon trading industry. The need for significant fuel breaks through and around the landscape conservation zones that will likely be harvested for biodiversity credits would put additional burden on Council to ensure the health and safety of the broader community. What additional resources did Council allocate to the 21,000 hectares of LCZ land that this council nominated in 2022, that this council increased the biodiversity offset charges on in 2023, and this council intends to lock up an environmental regulatory grid with the trees on private land by law in 2024.
Ms. Tylemore.
Through you, Mayor, whilst speaking about allocations of funds through the budget is not really my area, and I'm happy to be corrected, is that there hasn't been extra money provided, the LCZ hasn't come in, and renaming a zone doesn't cause a bushfire. So the fact that the trees are there, that the environment is there, the topography is there, is unchanged, and the controls that go around that will differ from what they are in certain areas, but it, by calling it the Landscape Conservation Zone does not automatically make it catch on fire. So council's responsibilities and duties about protecting communities from bushfire is unchanged because the environment is still the same and people still have to get bushfire approvals around their houses if they're in a bushfire prone area. That doesn't change either because that is governed under the Building Act, not the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act. It is only dealt with in certain sections under the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act. And the rules for BALs, bushfire attack levels, won't change because of those zonings. So it's not really different. Council will still need to consider what bushfire management they do in and around their communities or their public areas. And the same will go for the state government.
Through these three environmental regulatory benchmarks, council is enshrining the existing bushfire risk and making it ever more difficult to mitigate that bushfire risk. And council has a responsibility to establish and maintain suitable fire breaks through the municipality on private and public land. Council has that authority. Council has the responsibility to clear roadways. I've already raised questions about this before. Shall I ask what is happening on the roadside clearance? The roadside vegetation clearance, what is happening in that space? I raised questions about it in November 2022. I raised questions about it again in the middle of last year, and the answer from the general manager was that we're still looking into it. So what's happening about it now?
Well, we've got a new CEO who's probably not across this right now. I do recall the questions that you did ask. It was in relation to the study that had been undertaken. We will have to take that question on notice to provide an update.
For the CEO's benefit, Council...
That's okay. Council, I'll pass that information on to him. Unless there's another question, I can pass that on to him.
No, that's all. Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Can I pass this on to the Secretary?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you. If there are no further questions, we will move on to questions on notice from the public. We had a number of questions. The first in relation to the recycled water treatment plant from Ms. Winter, with a response from Mr. Smee and Ms. McNeil. The next one in relation to the same issue from Ms. Kingston, with a response from Ms. McNeil. Wildlife on Council Roads from Ms. Winter, with a response from Ms. Quinn. Graffiti, a question from Mr. Monker, and an officer's response from Mr. Reeve. A question on the budget from Ms. Winter, with a response from Mr. Reeve and Mr. Spinks. Over on page 7, biodiversity offset policy, questions from Ms. Landon, with a response from Mr. Stander. Page 8, public open space policy, a question from Ms. Landon and a response from Mr. Stander. And if anyone does wish to submit a question on notice, then they can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us to questions without notice from councillors on page 9. Does any councillor have a question? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Two questions from me. The first one is about illegal tree cutting. And my thanks to former councillor Julian Bush for raising this issue with me. Apropos to the felling of more than 20 mature eucalypts, which were cut down on the corner of Adventure Bay Road in Bruny Island some weeks ago, a matter that is has been reported to council. There are occasions, and I'm just speaking very broadly now, there are occasions when contractors may cut down trees without permits, presumably at the behest of the owner of the property. And when that happens, council takes enforcement action against the owner of the property and not against the contractor. So as former councillor Bush quite rightly reminded me, the following was an issue that he raised on his time during council, about which my question relates, which is, when a tree is illegally felled in Kingborough, why isn't the contractor who cuts down the tree charged or fined as well as the property owner? Because the developer sometimes is happy to pay the fine, it's a cost of doing business, but if a contractor is at risk of getting a big hefty fine, then when the owner of a property says, go and cut down that tree, well, they'll probably say, well, where's your permit? Do you have authority to do that if they're at risk of having a heavy fine? So, why isn't that the case in Kingborough at the moment?
Liz Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, we have the ability and we do take enforcement against contractors and landowners on a number of occasions, and that may also be digger drivers that might do works or builders that might do works, not limited to trees, but just to make it clear, yes, if you undertake the act, you cause the offence against the scheme, you can be liable and you can be penalised for that as well as the owner.
Thank you.
And Councillor Cordova.
That's really comforting. And so is the fine, there's 100% as much liability to the contractor or the builder who undertakes the work as the landowner, so both parties are equally culpable.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it comes to each, we need to look at each matter in its own, look at its own merits. The penalty fines are different if it's an individual or if it's a company. It's significantly higher if it's a company, and we deal with each matter on its own merits.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. That's really helpful. My second question now is about Kingston Park development, King's Quarter and the like. And this is just following on from what Mr. Grace was asking about. So we heard that we've received approximately $3 million from Traders in Purple. And then the second part of the question, which we didn't actually get to, was how much have we spent on Kingston Park? So my question is really, firstly, is the information public? When all is said and done, what is the total expected revenue from Kingston Park? And what's the total expected expenditure on Kingston Park? And is the difference being funded by grants or is it being funded by ratepayers?
So I'm not sure whether Mr. Spinks will have that information here, but it is publicly available because in the reports that come to council, there is, in our monthly financial reports, there is always a page that relates to the income and expenditure for the Kingston Park project, but I'm not sure whether Mr. Spinks, you'd like to add anything to that.
Through you, Mayor. No, I think that's best we take that on notice.
Yep.
Thank you, Mayor.
Are there any further questions? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, I've just got a couple of questions around the IMAS development that's happening in Taroona. Probably a question for Mr. Reeve. I've had several residents contact me about the increased traffic because it started last Monday. I was down there as well myself just for half an hour and just having a look around and noticed there was obviously quite an increase when it comes to trucks and utes using that small stretch of Kelvedon. Do we have any traffic calming measurements or temporary measures that we might be able to or are putting in place while construction happens at the IMAS upgrade?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I'm not aware of there being increased traffic that would actually warrant putting any sort of traffic management measures in place. I mean, certainly something we can have a look at a little bit further. From the construction of the facility, obviously there'll be times when there'll be a need for heavier amounts of traffic and times when there won't. So it's probably one which would require some discussion with the contractors and the developer to have a look at that and actually say whether we need to put anything in place at particular times. But certainly happy to pass that on to the relative officers to have a look at a little bit further.
Councillor Dean.
So is it within our scope to be able to put in things like temporary speed limit reductions or temporary signage just to say It's about 150, 200 metre stretch of a very narrow road with big lorries going up and down it, and obviously a whole bunch of vulnerable users using the area. So is it possible for us to do something like that, just in terms of this construction phase? Obviously, we've had this come before us as a DA, and it wasn't seen fit that we need to do anything long-term, but just while this construction's going on, is that something that we can actually do?
Mr. Reeve.
Mr. Reeve, there's certainly things we can actually do if it's warranted. So, for example, if you're getting a lot of traffic actually using the road and you wanted to put some signage up for pedestrians so they're aware of it, or you wanted to put some change of speed limit there because you had quite a large amount of traffic moving through there, you could do all those types of things. I think it would be best just to assess it first before we sort of went down that track. So I'm happy to pass it on to one of the officers to have a look at that a little bit further.
Can...
Councillor Dean.
Sorry, can I just make the comment then? Great that we can make an assessment of it. Can we please somehow... I mean, I've had just on that stretch of road a handful just in the last couple of days contact me, say... It's, and I was there, just, clearly there is increased traffic, there's a whole bunch of utes, and it's a very narrow stretch. And when I was there today, they're having to stop and let others come through because it's just not wide enough to compass big trucks. So they're feeling nervous and they're feeling uncomfortable. So it's just, you know, even if it's signage to say, you know, construction ahead or for pedestrians, as I was there today as well, visitors that come to the community garden that aren't relevant or familiar with the area and what's going on may have no idea that down the road and why there's an increased traffic. So it's good to hear that it's possible, but could I just somehow put on the radar that whether it's an assessment from us as like X amount of traffic equals a sign, that we actually do something about talking to those residents on the street and say, you're feeling uncomfortable, that should itself be some kind of measurement for us to take some action. So can I have that noted for the officer that does follow this up?
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Yeah, it certainly would look into all the different factors associated with it, which includes, you know, the interaction with the residents in the area. They're obviously used to having a far quieter street. As part of their construction, they would have some signage up which is closer to the actual development site itself, because that would be one of the requirements. However, it may be that there needs to be some a little bit more forewarning, potentially, and that itself is a relatively inexpensive and easy thing to do. So that can all be assessed and had a look at the same time.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Apologies to council officers present. I didn't email this through in advance, so I normally do that. My question is around a unusual triangular piece of land that is located at the intersection of Denison Street and Maranoa Row here in Kingston. It's where it's right north of, sorry, right above the slope of Kingston Christian Reformed Church. Mm-hmm. It's basically unoccupied land that a lot of families use to park when picking up their children from either side of Calvin. And a number of people have been asked by council staff on site when they turn up at 3:15 to move on, to say that this is now council property and that in 2 weeks' time or thereabouts, fines will begin to be issued towards anyone who parks there. Apparently, a sign was placed on the piece of land to say that council is taking control of this land under some sort of an act of parliament or an act of that local government act. And some people have looked into the history of the land, and it's apparently privately owned, and but it's I think it's I've looked under list and it's a bit vague. So could anyone demystify this unusual situation that seems to hit a bit of a crescendo over the weekend and hit my phones?
We're looking at Mr. Smee for some reason.
Through you, Mayor, I do recall this issue's come up before, and my recollection is that the ownership of the land is very unclear.
Yeah.
I think it was supposed to have been transferred to council but never did. But who actually owns it now would require some sort of legal determination.
Mm.
But without, you know, it was a number of years ago that this came up. So as to its current status, I couldn't say.
So it sounds like we might need to take that on notice, Councillor Antoli, and find out what compliance action is being taken, what the signage is, what the current situation is, because there's limited opportunities to pick up and drop down in that area at school time. So we'll take that on notice.
Thank you. That would be appreciated, because the concern is that their concern is that is council overstretching its authority to take charge of the land. And I've been told by one lady who had a council officer tap on her window and asked her to move on. So this council officer allegedly walked up to the site around school pick-up time to enforce and inform that it's council land. In a couple of weeks' time, we will issue fines for whoever parks here. And it's caused a bit of concern and alarm at the, I suppose, perceived heavy-handed approach. So if I could, would appreciate a response back. That'd be great.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question regarding Ms Valeska Winter's question regarding DA 2023174. I was going to ask and get the research on this, but last year, in about December last year, I was asked by a resident if their access to this walkway would be changed because of the development. And I'm quite correct that I did ask that at a council meeting, and the response to would that be changed, would they be limited in their access, was no. But I'm just a bit confused by some of the questions that have been asked and the council's response in regards to that. So is the access to walking their dogs limited? What is going on? And when it says in the response 5, what consultation will occur with the community? The response is it is intended to engage with stakeholders over the next month. So I can just get a bit of a summary of that and what the future looks like.
Yep, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. So things have changed since the response was given on the agenda. So there has been a meeting on site with Taswater and the developers and residents, and there has been a mutually agreeable outcome reached. So in essence, Taswater now own the land, and the right of public access across that land is by means of an easement that allows for public thoroughfare across the land. So Taswater are within their rights to confine public access to that easement. That hasn't occurred to date, but the actual easement that's been registered on title is in the wrong location, and Taswater have acknowledged that and have indicated a willingness to change that easement and put it into a location that everyone is in agreeance with. At the on-site meeting that we had last week, there was agreement around a rough alignment for the track that will be pegged out. And once everyone's had a look at that and are happy, Taswater will then get that formally surveyed. The existing easement on title will be lifted with council's consent, and a new easement will be created. So, at the time of preparation of the agenda, they were the responses, but things have moved a little bit since then.
No further questions. If not, we will continue. So that it takes us to questions on notice from councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice. So open session of council now adjourns at 6:18 p.m. and planning authority commences at 6:18 p.m. It takes us to page 10. It's DA 2425, addition and alteration to existing building, new signage, parking upgrade, landscaping and associated works, with a recommendation on page 22. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So this application is for the demolition of two outbuildings, the construction of a new upper-level unroofed deck, construction of access stairs and lift within the new deck area with covered walkway, provision of four new car parking spaces at the rear, a new wall sign, and the removal of a stand of small trees. There were three opposing representations relating to lighting, fencing and car parking, and I was really impressed actually with
the response of the applicant to those representations and also by the planners with the permit conditions. So in terms of the fence, the applicant was informed of the submissions and has advised that they are prepared to increase the height of the timber screen on the south side of the deck from 1.8 to 2.1. In relation to the noise, the applicant was advised of the issue and they have advised that the proposed use of the deck would be limited to facilitating access compliance to the existing building and not as a social or gathering space. And then in regards to the lighting, a condition has been included in the permit on any new lighting to ensure it does not create a nuisance. There are 9 conditions and 3 advice clauses, and I'm happy to lend my support to this one.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is regarding the ownership of the land. So we note that it's currently owned by Nod on Patterson, and that up until very recently it's was owned by the Baptist Union. Is that correct?
Ms. Tullamore.
That is correct.
So do we know, can you advise if this development is designed to be residential or commercial in nature? Or this upgrade, or this change of use?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor, thank you. At this stage, there's no proposal to change the use.
Yep.
The application has been lodged just for the alterations. We did ask the question, obviously, when it came in as to what the intentions were.
Yep.
We have received several inquiries about the property. That's probably no surprise. But at this stage, we don't know. Mm. So at this stage, it's been treated just as a change to the building form.
Right. So as we understand it, there's no connection to the Baptist Church at all through this entity?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. No, we're not aware of any connection. Okay. As far as we know, it changed hands back in last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Councillor Dean.
Just to add to that, it did go for sale last year, so it's fair to say that there was a change of hands. But just a follow-up question to Councillor Antoli. Is it unusual when you inquire and not get a response as to the intended purpose? I know that it's stated that it's continued under entertainment and community, church hall or something. But is that unusual?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. It's not unusual in that someone who doesn't know what they may or may not do in the future with the property. The new owner is looking to improve the property with looking at its potential for the future. So that's as much as we can get. So I don't think it's unusual. It's just I don't, at this stage, know. As I said, we have had several inquiries, which I guess we've given advice about being unsuitable. So I think the owner's exploring opportunities.
I have to say, I thought it was unusual. I would have thought that if you're lodging a DA for something, you know what you want to do in the building when you're renovating it. For what purpose are you renovating it? What do you think is going to be in there? But I guess we wait and see what the next chapter in that book says. Councillor Dean.
I'd echo those comments as well. I mean, they are constructing a large sign, just aren't disclosing what's on the sign, so I would say it's somewhat unusual. But they've got their reasons. They're spending significant money. Just to add that this is a building that has, for a long time, changed hands here and there, but hasn't had a huge... I think they've struggled to kind of get any work given that it's owned low residential. So from... I know it's not within what we discussed, but I think it's good to see that it has attracted some investment and will be getting an upgrade. What it ends up being, who knows, and I'll be intrigued to see. But in terms of the DA itself, it's, as the Deputy Mayor has pointed out, it's good to see that there's been a bit of back and forth and that the process that we live by in terms of notifying locals that there can be good outcomes when the developer listens and acts on them. So overall, I'm supportive and will be supporting this tonight. But very intrigued to see what comes out of it.
Any further discussion? I guess I've just got a follow-up question to that. So I take it there is nothing under the Act that compels an applicant to state what the intended purpose is of, like whether they're opening within the, within the boundaries of what it's zoned as. They don't have to disclose what is going in there. There's nothing to make them do that?
Through you, Mayor. The short answer is you're right. There's nothing to compel them to say what they want to do with it in the future. They've made an application under the current planning scheme. The report advises you to how we've treated that in terms of its current use, even though it's a vacant use. The church has only just ended its use. The church, up until the time it was sold, looked after the property and maintained it. So from our point of view, it's still got that use on it. It happens to be vacant. Someone's bought it. So you're right, we don't know. We can't compel them to tell us what they want to do. No.
And the definition of entertainment? We've all got our different ideas of what entertainment is, but it's just that... So community meeting and entertainment is the youth class, church and hall. How broad is that definition of entertainment?
The scheme does give you examples of what that means, but in this case, our advice is that the current use is as a church, as a sub. The use class is that broader group. Thank you. To change the use now from a church to some other use within that category, we'd have to assess that, and I would expect it would go through a process of advertising before someone could change the use to something else, even in the same use class.
Thank you. Councillor Dean and then Councillor Cordova.
Sorry, Mayor, you've reminded me of one question I missed that I was going to ask about. It was around the use of the deck, if you could shed any light on the discussions, because the community feedback was we don't want to obviously create too much noise, but they are building a significant open-air deck, which, you know, I feel like it'd be a waste of money if they weren't going to then use it for purposes other than to walk into a building. Could you just shed some light on what those discussions were? Because in the DA itself, or in our response, we've said that there needs to be written approval as a condition around if they're going to use that for socialising or something like that. Entertainment.
Mr Donovan.
Thanks, Mayor. The condition has been structured such that it aims to reduce any adverse impacts from the deck being used for other purposes apart from access. The applicants agreed to that. It's a little bit unusual, but that's a good outcome. You're right. Any future change of use in that area would be required to be supported by other reports, including noise reports. So if it was a change its use in the future, we would then be able to review that and through a planning process impose further requirements and restrictions if it was appropriate. You're right, though. The property is zoned a certain way, and we assess that deck with the same standards as the scheme says for a house. And the report, as you can see, says that it performed quite well to the standards. If someone built a house there and did that, we'd be approving it. So that's a benchmark of a sort. But having a commercial use there or a non-residential use, you're right, does change the noise aspects of it. So we would be looking at those aspects very closely for any change of use. But we did impose the conditions with that in mind. It's a bit restrictive, and all we are going to allow them to use it for until we get a further change of use is just to access the building. Yeah.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a very quick one about the new signage. I'd just like a bit more explanation around if my understanding is correct, which is that so it's a good thing that we're formalising signage, but we actually don't know what will go on the sign. And obviously that made me a bit trepidatious when I was first reading it, so we're going to potentially sign off on... But really what we're signing off on is the framework of where the sign will go. Is that correct? Or we're actually signing off on a particular sign, we just don't know what it will say yet?
So there are some clauses in the permit here. Clause 8 says that the sign can't contain any flashing or moving light. It can't be illuminated by external or internal light, so it is just a static, regular sign that's not lit up in any way.
Thank you. And so just a follow-up question. Thank you, Mayor. That is helpful. But is it true that...
We don't know what's printed on the sign, no, because we don't know what the development is going to be.
And so, again, it just makes it makes me very cautious about actually signing off on something because it almost feels deliberate that we don't know what it is. Is it just the fact that and I'm interested in here's the question, is what options do we have if we don't like what it is that is going to end up going there, and we don't think that it's an appropriate sign.
What do you think's going there?
I don't know. Nobody does. Tell me about what are the rules around signs. Thank you.
Mr. Donovan.
There's quite a few rules around signs. You're right. Through you, Mayor. Sorry. We don't regulate what goes on signs anyway. So when we approve a sign, it's really just the impacts of that to a physical environment, but not the content of the sign, and they can change signs, its content any time, so we don't regulate that. In this case, it's probably a good idea that we've had a look at it early and we've assessed it for its impacts and the impacts on the neighbours in the street, and we've imposed conditions accordingly. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess one question just for clarity. Around the condition on the deck, is this then saying that if two or three people stopped on the deck, had a conversation, had a drink in their hand, that's essentially going against what this condition's saying?
Mr. Donovan.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, it is. You're quite right. It's only to be used for access and not for any social gathering. So that they've, in effect, agreed to that condition. So you're right, yes, it won't be able to be used in that form.
But through you, Mayor, they've agreed to that?
Well, they haven't appealed it. They haven't told us they don't agree with it and would appeal. So they seem to accept that view at the time.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Deputy Mayor, did you want to sum up? No, I'm going to put the recommendation then as printed on the screen. Moved by Councillor Gladewright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. The Planning Authority of Council now adjourns at 6:31 p.m. and open session of Council recommences at 6:31 p.m. Takes us to page 44, petitions still being actioned. There were no petitions still being actioned. And petitions received in the last period at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received. Still on page 44, officers' reports to council. With a recommendation on page 46, we're looking at the Kingston Beach Local Area Traffic Management Plan. Got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Fox. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. So the purpose of this report is to provide feedback on the engagement for local area traffic management measures at Kingston Beach and to outline next steps. There are $350,000 in the 23-24 budget to undertake various works at Kingston Beach, and I'm super excited about this. This is one of the things that I campaigned on 3 years ago when I first ran for council, so it's very, very exciting to see something finally come to fruition. The $350,000, thanks to some emails that went round this afternoon by Councillor Midgley, we understand will be spent on a wombat crossing near the start of the commercial zone, curb extensions near the early learning centre, curb extensions near Balmoral Road, a raised threshold at the start of the 40-kilometre zone, pavement markings and improved pedestrian access at the beach, at Beach Road and the Osborne Avenue intersection. So Kingston Beach is such a popular area. It's getting so busy, and it's incredibly alarming to see the statistics of how many people are not observing the correct speed limit. Mm-hmm. The measures that have been allowed for will really improve the area and make it much, much easier and safer, I believe. I completely support the recommendation as it stands, and I'm sure every parent and carer trying to get their little ones into a car when they pick them up outside that childcare centre will be very, very grateful for these works, as will those who are accessing the shops. And I think it's a wonderful piece of work, and I'm really, really pleased to see that we've got some money in the budget for it, and well done to everybody involved.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, it is an excellent... There are some excellent outcomes in this, and noting that it is National Road Safety Week, and National Road Safety Week means safety for all road users, and that's for people in cars, pedestrians, cyclists and scooters. And thanks so much for staff, for the author of the report, providing the details as Deputy Mayor Gladewright recommended in regards to recommendations of Point B, because it was a bit unsure there in regards to what we were supporting. And I just like, through you, Mayor, I'd like to ask if the author of the report would like to provide any more detail in regards to those recommendations or any other further points just in regards to the report and the consultation sort of process as well.
Mr. Reeve, I'm sure you'll be brief.
Three minutes, fairly open-ended question, so it can go on for a long time, but I will
I
be
know,
brief.
That's why I'm...
In,
two, why
in
I
less than a minute.
Less than a minute. What I will say is that this has been going on for a little while. It was certainly driven by the idea, particularly of getting that pedestrian crossing down in the commercial area, and that's something we really want to do. It has gone to the community and has got some really good support from the community for all the different measures, which is great, because sometimes that doesn't necessarily happen. The only one that was fairly split was for the cycling infrastructure, which we've sort of parked for the time being. So there'll be some other ones we'll be looking at in future years, and that will be one of them. I think we're pretty well advanced with the designs for all the various different measures, and we're not too far away from actually finalising those and getting into the area of actually being able to put those out to tender, so which is really positive. I think it'll be really good for that area, and certainly we will then be in a better position to have a 40k zone, particularly along that beach road area, which hopefully traffic will be doing either 40k or less than 40k rather than 50k, which is what's happening at the moment.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And just a question in regards to, so after the feedback from the community consultation and various committees that this report was taken to, what sort of changes, I guess, were made?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, I mean, most of it's to do with the individual property owners where we're intending to actually put these measures. Obviously, it tends to affect them a little bit more than anything. And it's also tied up with a little bit with what measures you can or cannot put in or cannot easily put in there. So some of these ones there, you know, you've got to take into account public transport, you've got to take into account drainage and whether that's actually possible as well at the same time, and also where you're going to be able to locate these. So there's some limitations in terms of where you can put things. For example, the one which we've got, which is the main one I talked about before, which is the Wombat Crossing in the commercial area, it really has to be located between two crossing points that come into the car park, so you're quite limited in terms of the size and the shape and so forth. So it's been driven a lot more by that as compared to not. As most of our roads there, we get into the problem of having limitations with the narrowness of the road. It's just how things have developed over time. So we're quite limited in some of the things we can actually put in place. So to a large extent, the engineering side of things there has sort of driven where things are. I think in reality what the consultants come up with and what we've sort of further refined through design is probably going to be a pretty good solution for that road there. And as I said, the main thing will be to deal with the traffic so it's actually reduces down below the speeds they're doing at the moment.
Great. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I'd like to make some points, and I guess as councillors are aware, I'm the chair of Cycling South and chair of our Kimber Bicycle Advisory Committee, and although not 100% expert in that field, probably don't ride as much as I used to, I do reach out to people who look at safe cycling options every day and work with councils and government to try and find safe solutions. So I'm just going to make a few points in regards to some information I've received about that, and that was discussed in our Kimber Bicycle Advisory Committee. So it's in relation to curb extensions and the use of sharrows. So what I've been told that curb extensions create a pinch point for people riding bicycles, pushing them into the middle of the traffic lane. While very confident cyclists are used to doing this, for most people who ride a bicycle, it's an uncomfortable and daunting move. Wombat crossings are much easier for people on bicycle to cross as they can keep their line on the left of the road. Putting in curb extensions also severely limits the ability to install safe cycling infrastructure into the future. And there's just been a really great example of this, actually, where the City of Hobart has just cut back curb extensions, costing them money, at intersections along Campbell Street to make for its first separated cycleway in the city centre. But that was at great cost to council, where they didn't put the safety kind of measurements, the best practice in first. So in contrast, wombat crossings would not interfere with the cycleway being installed in the future, as they would act to slow bikes just as they slow cars as people are crossing. There are different options that would consider to suit for all safety for all users, etc., cut through curb extensions. So I guess I'm looking at proposal like for different, not the curb extensions, but these cut through curb extensions. I couldn't get an example of where they were used in Hobart, but they are, I guess, being shared amongst cycling experts and people who are advocating to council having a cut through so cyclists don't have to go out and there's a bump, there's just like a cut through before kind of the curb extension. And just in regards to the sharrows, so for those who don't know, the sharrows are the road marking on the roads for bikes. So they're normally a bicycle symbol. They're not a dedicated lane. They use the same lane as cars. So they don't provide any protection for bike riders, and they really shouldn't be used on roads with high traffic volumes. So they're useful as wayfinders on low traffic volumes, traffic calm roads with low speed limits that operate as genuine local bike routes. And Beach Road and Osborne both have too many vehicles to be used like for sharrows. So like to understand the use of sharrows more, again on the Campbell Street cycleway and the shared space next to the hospital, that gives like a genuine space as speeds are very low and traffic volumes are low. And so I guess people who ride bikes all the time wouldn't need a sharrow, and people who don't ride bikes as often, not as often or aren't as confident cyclists, and they're the people that we want to help make that change. We want to make it safe so all people can ride. Like, sharrows don't really make that difference because they're not actually any safer. So I guess with this research in mind, what are staff's thoughts on the use of sharrows being used in this precinct?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. It certainly was something that was recommended by the consultant, and we did have a look at it from an officer's perspective. We're probably not in favour of sharrows either, probably for very similar reasons what you've actually mentioned there. There's quite a large volume of traffic that's actually using that particular road, so it's not a small off-the-street thing. We do have examples elsewhere where we've used this in our roadways, but they're very low-volume type streets. So it's probably not going to gain what you'd want to gain out of it. So it wasn't something we were looking at pursuing, certainly in the short term anyway.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And I guess in regards to curb extensions, in regards to the safety for people who ride bikes, what are other options that we can consider? And I would like to move an extra point C to the recommendation, I guess, that highlights that we actually look at investigating safer cycling options versus putting in curb extensions. I'm just wondering staff's opinions on that one, please, Mayor.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess we've done a fair bit on the design already. I said one of the problems we do have with some of these things there is actually, engineering them to fit a space. So there's two areas which have got curb extensions. One's near the early childhood learning, which has a possibility of becoming a wombat crossing. I think it was actually listed as a potential wombat crossing in the actual consultant's point to start off with. However, there may be some issues in terms of the drainage, trying to deal with the drainage in that area. The other one's actually right at the intersection of Balmoral Road. Now, if you were going to do something there, that would end up being quite an expensive raised intersection at that point to actually allow for that. And one of the problems you actually would have as well is that you would have effectively a raised area down in the commercial, about 100, 150 metres or so. You'd hit another one at Balmoral. About 50 metres later, you hit another one at the early childhood, and then about another 100 metres later, you'd hit another one further down the road at the entrance there. So that's actually going to be quite difficult to manage, particularly for public transport. What you're actually trying to aim for is if you're going to be putting those types of things in there is to actually make sure they're reasonably flat, if we can, and also that they're spaced fairly evenly as well at the same time. So there's a bit of a compromise that actually needs to happen through there. So, look, I'd be happy if you were going to make an amendment there that was, I guess, fairly general in terms of, continuing to look at the options for that, which we intend to do anyway, and it's written in the report as such. But I think, you'd have to take into account that you wouldn't want to put a recommendation in there that effectively tied council officers' hands into doing something that's probably not possible to do or very difficult to do.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Midgley. Thanks very much for that honest feedback. So I would like to put forward an amendment to the A, B and add a C to the motion.
Yep, so you'll need to read out the amendment, yep, and then you'll have to ask the mover and seconder if they are agreeable to it. Otherwise, we'll have to deal with it separately.
That's okay. I would do that, but I might just make a change. Amanda, Ms. Morton's got that, and I might just make a little change to the beginning of it, actually, in light of what Mr. Reeve has said. So I've just got to think. I might, instead of remove, I might state put on hold.
Okay.
And rather than remove at the beginning, I'd like to say put on hold, but can I seek Mr. Reeve's advice in regards to that in light of what he just stated to me? Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. I guess that's a fairly general statement. I'm not even quite sure what I'd actually do with it afterwards, because put on hold in terms of going back to the community again, put on hold in terms of coming back to council again, I think I'd need to have a bit better understanding, yep, in terms of what that actually means.
There's another sentence after that one that... Oh, there's a point D. We'll put it in a point D. Yes, you could please put it in point D and I'll see what it looks like, if that's okay.
No, it's holding it up. Okay, so that's the... Are you happy with that as printed, C and D? Is that the amendment that you wish to put forward?
I think I'd like to say if I remove them, because it sounds like we've already done some of the work, putting them on hold, I guess, more in line with what Mr. Reeve has said. So I guess if we can have some sort of... I guess what I'm trying to look for is some other solutions to make it safe, to investigate safe cycling
options.
Okay,
but we need to get the words of the amendment so that I can put it to the mover and seconder whether they agree with that. Otherwise, we have to deal with it separately.
Maybe I put investigate instead of put on hold. Maybe. Sorry.
Is that going to help you any further, Mr. Reeve? Because I feel like we've already done this in this whole report. But I'm happy to be guided by you, of course.
When I put the recommendation in there, the original recommendation, which is point B, it's very general in its nature, which allows a lot of these things to actually come into play, if you like. So it just talks about, you know, looking at the various traffic management and pedestrian improvements along Beach Road. So it allows those things to actually happen. And I'm hearing what you're saying, and there is a way to actually try and deal with that without actually trying to tie yourself up in knots with various different extra recommendations. And that's probably to go away with what you're actually talking about there. Look at any other options there. What are the opportunities? What are the things that you might not be able to do it for because of various different reasons, whether it's a drainage issue or whether there's some other issues, and actually feed that back. And it doesn't even have to be fed back through another council report. It can actually be fed back directly to councillors and then get any comments from that. Because what I am conscious of is this has sort of been going on for quite a while, and this project, you know, I don't really want to continue to delay it. I mean, there's certainly aspects of what we can put in place, which I think we are quite happy with. But maybe that's a way of trying to deal with it rather than not. So if I make that commitment, is to actually say these are the other potential options, but here's the good and bad of those potential options and fire that off to councillors, that still fits within the original recommendation you've actually got, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. I guess I'm just trying to look at how to mitigate any, what happened in Campbell Street in Hobart, I guess, and looking at the most safest options possible for people who ride bikes. But if that's an outcome that can be achieved in Part B, then I guess I'm happy to put that forward, but I would like to just test the ground and just see anyway if people would like to see it included.
Okay, so can I just be clear? So you're proposing the amendments,
yep.
So adding C and D. Is it acceptable to the mover? No, okay. Mover and seconder have said no, they don't accept the amendment. So you're taking out, so C and D goes. So we're back to the substantive motion. Do I have any further contributions? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Firstly, I just want to concur with what the Deputy Mayor has said, that this has been on the cards for a long time. There's a lot of excited people to see this, and I think it shows in the consultation we've had, the four options for Beach Road have come back with 80% plus support from over 200 respondents. So I think we're on the money. The other pleasing thing to see was that just under 50% of the respondents were residents from Kingston Beach, so the locals are happy with it as well. The only thing I would say is I think the idea that Councillor Midgley's spoken about with the curbs potentially being curbs where you've got the gap in the middle so the bike riders can go through, if that can be put up as a consideration for council officers to consider, I'll be happy to support that. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
I've got a few questions. Where are we at in terms of it's named up, in terms of separated cycleway through the golf course so that it would connect up pretty much from the beach all the way up?
Mr. Reeve, I'll let you have that one.
Through you, Mayor. Look, it's an interesting one. I mean, at various different stages there, we've had some discussions with the golf course. Sometimes it's been initiated by them, sometimes it's been initiated by us. There hasn't been any, I guess, strong agreement to actually, particularly from the golf course, not so much from council, strong agreement.
The golf club, I don't think the course has got any.
The course is not actually speaking to us at the moment, but so certainly there hasn't been that strong agreement to go down that process. I think it still sits as an aspirational viewpoint from council. It certainly was identified through the work we did on our bike strategy. To look at that at some stage there, or to say not look at that, to actually move to that point at some stage. So it's still sitting there, back of mind.
I think it's fair to say, though, that it's not something we're actively pursuing, because last time we went down this path, no pun intended, they threatened council with legal action.
Well, that's good information, because that's all happened probably before my time. So that sounds like it's unlikely. How likely then is, just to pick up on Councillor Midgley's comments around the potential for, you know, tearing it up and putting in what would be a separated cycleway along Beach Road?
Mr. Reeve.
Really, I'd say it's probably fairly unlikely. The reason being it's quite narrow and quite a difficult area. What we're actually trying to achieve here is if we can actually reduce the speed of the traffic through there, then it becomes a much more comfortable environment for cyclists to actually cohabit with. In other words, what actually happens is they sort of take control of the space, and it's quite comfortable for the vehicles as well because they're used to actually going relatively slow down there. 50k is too fast for that. 40k... yeah, maybe, but certainly if we put some of these measures in place there, I'd expect that we will get quite a reduction in the speed limit, and I think that will actually help in terms of that. So, look, in answer to your question, just because of the nature of the road and the narrowness of the road and the closeness of the properties to the edge of the road there, it's limited in terms of what you can do. Certainly we'll pick up on the points raised there about whether there's any options for pass-through for some of the curb extensions and so forth, and I'll provide that back to councillors there, you know, informally by email there, so they're aware of that. But, yeah, limited.
Again, good feedback. I think on the point that you've raised about the cut-throughs, like if you look at what we're trying to achieve and you're putting these build-outs to narrow the road and slow down the speed, you're going to be competing with parked cars that park parallel on Beach Road regardless. So cyclists are already being pinched when there happen to be cars parked on Beach Road. So this only is not changing, I suppose, or worsening the environment. It net gain will be that hopefully all the speed reduction, so that, as you pointed out, Officer Reeve, that it will hopefully reduce the speed and make it more amenable all round. So I am supportive of what's being proposed, but in light of the responses that I've heard, it sounds like, as it's pointed out in 9.2 and the conclusion about the, I guess, the conflict of trying to find a compromise that would suit cyclists, given that they are a user group, I find it a bit interesting that we aren't going to go with anything. You know, so Sharrows, understandably, shouldn't be used if we're going to think of a long-term prospect of a separate cycleway, understood. But if we're not going to go with a separate cycleway, which I understand, then I feel like while they might not have the intended or huge benefit, in the situation where we are going to ultimately reduce it down to 40 kilometres, I just want to know how much, I suppose, it would even be just to put the Sharrows down for that stretch of road to give me some idea.
Mr. Reeve.
Yeah, through you, man. Look, it's not an expensive thing necessarily because it's just line marking, not in context of the rest of the works. There is some, you know, maintenance considerations you have with any line marking you put in, but, you know, not that expensive. So, you know, some of the things could be either that or signage or other more passive type things that you could actually put in place. I guess the comment about, you know, looking at other potential solutions, I think, wasn't meant to be that we'll put some works in there and then we'll remove the works there to get a compromise solution in there. It was more on the lines of saying, well, let's have a look and see how that actually works there. Is there any additional work we need to do on the transitions to some of these traffic management measures, for example, there that might actually better improve that? Is there some work we need to do on providing some additional warning signage and so forth for motorists, those types of things, to actually, I guess, allow for that smoother movements of our cyclists through that area.
Councillor Dean.
Good. Look, I just make the comment that I don't want us necessarily to, given that it sound like a cost-effective measure, and I understand that Sharrows in the scheme or in the spectrum of protecting cyclists, they are at the low end, that we don't, out of this, disregard them entirely, given that we aren't going to go down a separated cycleway. I think they have its place and should be used if it's going to be cost-effective, and it shouldn't just be thrown out entirely. That's what I would like us to consider. My only last question is just around the perceptual countermeasures. Obviously, this is, again, just on-road infrastructure that we're painting, whether it's waves or water drops, whatever it ends up being, neither here nor there. But have we got precedents from other areas, particularly high-use areas like this, in terms of the longevity? I'd hate for it to go down and then, you know, within 6 months look really tatty. Is this something brand new? Is this something that's been done and tried and tested? Just get some feedback on that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, look, there's a few different examples of it. I think there's some up in Devonport from memory, as you come off the ferry, and there's some other ones. There's certainly some that have been done interstate as well at the same time. So you won't have much success if you decide to paint something onto the existing asphalt, because we've done a couple of those before as well and down Roslyn Avenue, and they have a very limited life associated with them. But you can actually, and what we'd be considering is whether or not we actually, there's a couple of options we're thinking about here. One is whether we actually look at just improving some of the crossing points in terms of zebra crossings and so forth, or the other option is where we actually look at taking out the intersection and replacing it with coloured asphalt. So that goes all the way through, if you like, and that's got the same longevity of any other asphalt you'd like to put down.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you so much for answering my questions. I will be supporting, as the Deputy Mayor has already pointed out, if you've done pick up or drop off down near one of those early learning centres, you will find it a bit of a nightmare, and I'm sure that this will go a long way to reassuring parents, and so the quicker we can get on with it, the better, and applaud the work that's been done so far. So fingers crossed.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd just like to congratulate the author on this report, and I think The recommendation to having separated cycle lanes is probably not a good idea. Having been chairman of Cycling South and KBUG for 20 plus years, and also the Access Committee 20 plus years, looking at the recommendations here, I think the Access Committee has been trying to get changes to pedestrian safety here for at least 2.5 decades, if not three. We've finally managed to get off the beachfront and now we're coming up Beach Road, and this is going to make such a difference if with the modern techniques of slowing down traffic, of making people feel less confident as cars and buses, everybody slowing down, it's going to be a win for cyclists as well. And I think everybody wins with this design. It's good to give people confidence that it is going to work, and I think it will. I'm hoping that it will, and I think as we see the details of this design come to us, we're going to be quite pleased with it, and I'm going to support the recommended motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I've got two questions. Have we thought about reducing the speed limit to 30 kilometres?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, no, we haven't. I guess these are some of the things that were, I suppose, outside of the scope of this particular project, bearing in mind the whole area, the whole precinct area is actually zoned as 40k. And, you know, obviously, if we were looking at actually reducing that further, you know, we go through the same process we normally do with speed limit changes there, and, you know, to provide the justification to the Transport Commission as to whether that's, you know, something that they want to actually accept or not. So, yeah, look, the simple answer is probably no. We've just more concentrated on actually trying to effectively enforce the 40k that we've actually got there at the moment. Whether or not that's appropriate to actually look at that further in the future, I guess that's another consideration.
Thank you. I think I have heard somewhere that 30 kilometres is safer for all road users. The next question is around just what has been proposed to provide to councillors regarding safety changes in light of cyclists. I'm wondering if that could be brought to a KBAC committee as well. Could I have a commitment for that, please?
Mr. Reeve.
I missed the last part of that question.
If the changes that have been suggested in regards to safety proposals in light of cyclists would have been discussed tonight, I'm wondering if that, what is to be provided to councillors, if that could be also provided to the KBAC committee.
Yeah, look, it certainly can be provided back to them. And I suppose what I'm actually trying to do is wary of the meeting schedules of KBAC and so forth there, is more to say we have a budget, it's a current year budget there, and actually try and make sure that we get to the point of actually being able to put these works out as a package as compared to not. So I suppose I'm conscious of that, which is why I sort of mentioned out-of-session sort of stuff by emails and those types of things there. So as long as we're comfortable with that, then that's the way I'd probably proceed with it.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll race through my very brief contribution just to say that, yeah, thank you, of course, for all the work that's gone into this. It's a long time coming. I echo the sentiments of my colleagues that any improvement is a good improvement, that because the situation currently is not good. I just want to make a brief point in support of Councillor Midgley's explanation around cycling infrastructure. When we do talk about cohabiting this space with, already we've got pedestrians and vehicles, we've got bicycles already, I just want to make the point that understanding the constraints of this being a narrow road, there is an ideal situation about having separated cycleways, which is why I'm so disappointed to learn that the negotiations with the golf club are, sound like they're not progressing in a timely way. Picture Liverpool Street in Hobart. Even though the curbs are raised, it's a high pedestrian area, even though the cars are going very slowly, because you're intermingling, there's parking, there's parked cars, there's the risk of dooring, it's still unsafe for kids to be on their bike riding down Liverpool Street in Hobart. It's still unsafe. Whereas if people are on, if they're separated, even with planter boxes or, you know, some kind of separation from the traffic, that's how you get people who are currently uncomfortable getting on the bike, they're more likely to get on the bike, and we know all the statistics around that. So I do hear the points being made by Councillor Dean around showers. I think it says, so it says on page 43 of the report about, I think it's a cost of between $15,000 and $20,000 to paint those on, and I do hear that idea that coloured asphalt has the same life as the other types of road, which I think would be preferable. I just really want to, I guess, drive the point home that if there's more work that can be done with the golf course, I think that would ultimately really help. And I just think that whilst we're trying to find a middle ground, I guess a compromise, we're trying to make sure that any improvement is a good improvement at this stage. But ultimately, we really do want to have a separation between people trying to ride their bike and pedestrians and the vehicles. I mean, ultimately, that's what we need to be aiming towards. Thanks again to all the work that's gone in and to the community for having their say. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further discussions? I'll just, before I ask Councillor Gladright to sum up, just also acknowledge the work that has gone into this. Like Councillor Gladright, I've been calling for this for some time, and I was reminded of it actually only yesterday as I came out of the Kingston Beach Hall at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon after the Kingston Beach Flower Show, and I spent ages trying to get across the road to where my car had been parked because there was just no crossing point, and at that time of the weekend there were so many people coming and going, it took me so long to get across. And I can move fast if I need to, but I still felt very vulnerable going across the road. And the age of a lot of the people who were attending the show, of course, was of a more senior age in our community. And I sort of thought as I was coming out, I wonder how some of them are going to go, because there was limited parking around as well and they were having to go back to their cars. So I think that this, the statistics are showing, unfortunately, that people are just driving too fast in this area. You do really take a chance when you try to cross the road, so hopefully we can get these calming measures in, and we can also ensure that we have the Wombat crossings as well. So thank you to everybody for what I think has been a valuable conversation. Councillor Gladright, did you want to sum up? No? All right, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. That takes us to page 165, Kingston Parking Strategy Update, with the recommendation on page 167. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. And just for the information, Councillor Street had to apologise. He's had to leave and won't be rejoining us. Kingston Parking Strategy Update. Any mover or seconder? Councillor Midgley. Seconded. Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, it is a big big one to move, and I can understand a bit of a, you know, controversial perhaps, but I look forward to the discussions that we can have in regards to this. It has been, as we can see the report, I think it was 2016. We know that since 2016 so much has happened in Kingborough in regards to the area that we're looking at. We've had so much growth and there's been so much change and new development. And it's kind of, it's busier. There's traffic jams. You know, we used to be able to get to Hobart in 15 minutes. Was it maybe 20 minutes? I don't know how fast I was going then, 20 years ago. But, like, you know, there's traffic.
It was 9 minutes when I first moved to Kingston.
Nine minutes. There we go. So we know times have changed and things have changed. And this strategy kind of, I guess, outlines really that times are moving and things are changing. There are, like, a number of recommendations and, I guess, some, you know, the report is massive for anybody who read this out in the community. I know for many of us, probably a couple of hours just reading over it and reading all the bits in it. And I guess, I'm just looking at my notes on this one. And really, I mean, if I look at the elephant in the room, it's about the paid parking, I guess, in regards to our kind of move to that. But there's also recommendations regarding multi-storey car park. Looking at that, there's also recommendations in regards to, like, you know, promoting the park and ride options that we've got. There was an agreement with council to, I guess, to look at sort of paid parking options after these park and ride options were put forward. It also for me really highlighted the fact that we need to change kind of that modal sort of shift. And I guess in regards to, again, I speak in my passion, I guess, and my interest around cycling, like it really highlighted the report for me, you know, the lack of, we have had a lot of work and growth in this area, and I do really want to acknowledge that in regards to the last, you know, since 2016, like all the great pathways and off-road tracks and things like that, but it's still not safe to ride from Margate to Kingston on a bike. There's no way that I put my kids on that bike. And I guess, yes, we are stepping away from car parking kind of strategy, but it all ties in because we're all looking at kind of solutions. And in the long term end, what I got from this report was like, how can we change that shift and how can we get people to think about where they're going to park, if they're not going to drive, using different transport means, I guess. And that was a real emphasis, I thought, about this report and how we can get people on buses. So we've had a look at, you know, that's what the park and rides were there for as well. So I guess there's a lot of things that kind of came with this report. And I guess some of the things that also were highlighted in that for me was that real need to get things like that Margate to Kingston, a safe option for cyclists put forward, because we are never going to see a change and we're just going to see more and more parking in Kingston, and then we're going to never have this kind of... everybody wants parking, you know, everybody wants parking, they don't want to pay for it, and this whole kind of, discussion in that space. But I guess in regards to paid parking, also to note, Devonport and Burnie City Council have paid parking as well. But also we need to think about the cost and the impact of that in regards to the bus fares. So I really hope that the government, I think there was a commitment from all parties. Some wanted free buses. The Greens advocate for free buses, but it looked like there was a bit of a compromise in regards to 50% reduction in bus fare fees, which would be really great. And that would be a great synergy for then us to perhaps introduce some paid parking, all-day paid parking in Kingston. I've had notes, but I haven't even looked at them. One thing that I did note that it didn't really talk about carpooling or any actions to kind of encourage this. And again, that's another way that we can look at reducing cars off the road and reducing different ways people park and parking together. I'm wondering, I guess, in the strategy, why did we not sort of mention carpooling, or is there anyone that's looking at carpooling? Is it something that we kind of don't want to do because it's a bit taboo? We don't want to encourage people to get in cars of other people. Just wondering, yeah, why that wasn't sort of mentioned. Years ago, carpooling used to kind of be the thing, but now it doesn't seem to be mentioned any more in, like, parking strategies and things.
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. It's probably because it's more specific to car parking, so that would be something you typically see in a transport plan as well at the same time. So it's probably not one that they sought to put in there necessarily as part of this particular process. I don't think there's anything taboo about carpooling at all. I think that's definitely supported. It's certainly supported by the, you know, the extra lane they're putting down the southern outlet, because that'll be a T3 lane. So I don't think there's any particular reason why it's not encouraged. It's probably just a little bit out of scope, that's all.
Thank you. And also just a note as well in regards to them promoting, which it says as one of the recommendations regarding the park and ride sort of options. Something that hasn't committed in that hasn't changed in that space is the secure bicycle parking. And yes, a bit off that total strategy. When we look at the whole picture, for me, I look at parking and driving as a whole picture, which is totally outlined in this strategy. So if we want to make people have this change, if people want to not drive to different places like the park and rides, those secure bike parks there are just, they haven't happened. So we're putting all these kind of barriers in place for people to use their cars all the time. So I guess one of the positive things about looking at a paid parking in Kingston, we might see a bit of a change, but I'd also be cautious in regards to implementing that because of the high price of bus fares, and I wouldn't like to see sort of maybe any change in that space until we could see the government commitment to a reduction on bus fares. But I'd like to know, through you, Mayor, also in regards to, I guess, the whole overall recommendations, and the big one that we are really considering in supporting this one
is the introduction of the paid parking. What's sort of the timeline? What are we thinking about this? What does it come back to council? Does this, if we're supporting this strategy, like what are we actually committing to?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, it's deliberately couched in such a way to say it's in principle, which means automatically when you see that there's likely to be another report to council if it's agreed upon. So at the moment there is a resolution that council made in terms of actually it was a bit more straightforward than that. It actually said we will implement paid parking at the completion of the park and rides, which are now obviously complete. The reason why we've actually brought this back is because we recognise the fact that, you know, it is a fairly topical issue. It's important for council to be on board with it, and that's the reason why it's come back in that shape and form. From here, if, for example, council adopted the recommendation as it is, what we would do is we would go away and say, yes, the area that we've identified that we would like to do that in would be Skipper Lane, which is where we've talked about before, and looked at, I guess, the infrastructure that would need to go in to deal with that, and also, you know, how we'd actually implement that as well, our timings, all those types of things, and that's the detail that we would then bring back to council at a later stage.
Great, thank you. I look forward to hearing contributions from my colleagues.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to propose an amendment, if I may, to add a clause C that reads, affirm that Council has no intention of introducing paid parking in the Kingston CBD for short stay parking areas for stays of 3 hours or less.
I second that.
Hang on. Let's just wait and see. Let's get it up. Okay, so is that accepted by the mover and seconder?
Is there an opportunity to seek officer feedback on that amendment? If I say no, then it goes to a separate thing and then we can discuss
it. Mr. Reeve.
Through me. Look, it's an interesting one in terms of I can understand the intent behind it in terms of, I guess, trying to put the information in this community to say, look, this is where council's thinking's actually at. I suppose the only issue with it is it remains a resolution of council until, you know, another council decides to actually change that resolution. You know, if that was to change in the future, there, that's probably what it would require. You'd need to actually, resolve to remove that one. If the intention is just purely to, I guess, make sure that people out there are aware that the thinking of council as it is to just say, look, we only really want to concentrate on the long-term car parking, which is what's in the strategy, and actually reiterate that I probably have less of an issue with it.
I think I understand Councillor Cordova's rationale behind this because it's trying to ensure that people don't get the wrong message from this parking strategy that we've got before us. And knowing how social media works, I think if we don't put something like this in, we could end up with all sorts of conspiracy theories out there. Councillor Midgley and Councillor Dean, are you... Councillor Midgley, as the mover, you're happy? Councillor Dean, are you... You're not? Sure, you are happy. Yes, okay, great. All right, so that becomes part of the substantive motion. And Councillor Cordova, did you want to make your contribution now? Okay, you better speak soon because the opportunity might be closing. Nobody else is speaking.
Oh, okay, I'll ask questions. Look, it's obviously not super popular. Well, won't be when it comes out, but I suppose what needs to be reiterated is what Officer Reeve has pointed out about the fact that this is in principle support. I mean, that's where there was some hesitancy for me of tying us by agreeing to point C. I have hesitancy around that, but hearing also that any changes to our parking in terms of paid parking in Kingston needs to come back before us with more detail, reassures me that no matter what, nothing is happening at this point. It's just a continuation of our in-principle support. So I'm fine with it as it stands because it does need to come before us again. Look, just the fact that the report kind of notes... The report's 100 pages, so I know we're all on a bit of borrowed time here and can get late sometimes, but it would be nice if... I don't think everyone at home is going to be reading 100 pages of the report. It was actually very interesting to read in terms of looking at the measurements that were taken in terms of what the supply is, what the demand is. As interesting as that was, I don't think the average Joe is going to be reading it. So could we potentially just get, in a nutshell, a 30-second explanation as to why even paid parking? It says, yes, it's about paid parking for long-term and high-demand areas, but what exactly, why is it so critical that we actually have this affirmation of our support for it moving forward, whether it's in a year or three or five?
Mr. Reeve, in the hot seat tonight.
Through you, Mayor. Look, I think it's about being equitable for everybody. That's the main reason behind this. It's definitely not about revenue raising at all. It's about actually recognising that things such as long-term parking, long-stay parking in areas like this, when they become quite developed and become, you know, pretty much like a city, they come at a premium. And, you know, it's a cost to council in terms of actually having those types of facilities in place. And in reality, from that perspective there, it's fair that people who are taking that opportunity to use those, and a lot of them might be using it to not necessarily work in the city, they might be using it to actually work elsewhere, so you might not necessarily be getting all the benefits from that. But I think it's about a fairness aspect. I think that's the most important thing with paid parking, and it's the main reason why people, I guess, start on that journey with paid parking. So, yeah, look, that'd be the 30-second snap, if you like.
Councillor Dean.
And that we are at the point of being somewhat full and we having to need to look at our options. And potentially, as the report also points out, that, if I could add just that, it's also to encourage alternative use into the CBD, so those that can bus or cycle find alternate ways if they can, so that they might be deterred by a small charge if they possibly can. So that might be other reasons. The report does note that paid parking is fairly full when it comes to the CBD, but there is supply remaining in the periphery. So can there be any reassurance that if we did go down this route that it's just not going to clog up our side streets with an impact on the amenity of local residents because people wanting to avoid a small charge and park their cars a little bit further away in front of someone's house?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Look, it's unlikely, but in the event it does, because there is some streets that are still fairly close to the CBD, which the option would be for people to park there, then we could look at other options in terms of those particular streets as well. So, you know, there's plenty of examples out around the place where you have resident parking and so forth in some of those streets, or resident parking schemes in some of those streets. So they're all options for us to consider if that did come about. But I guess what we would be coming back with, without preempting what a further report might be, is, you know, looking at something that's relatively modest in terms of what we're actually asking for people to pay. So not something there that we would expect there to be lots of expensive equipment there and empty car parks that go with it, but something that's, you know, would still encourage people to be using that car park and have it relatively fully utilised as well.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you very much. Look, I will be giving my support for this, obviously, to again clarify that anything comes before us, any actual decisions on this need to come back before us, as I think a lot of us around the room would have a bunch of questions as to how it would be implemented, how we bring the community on board and make sure that we don't have any adverse outcomes in terms of its implementation. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Councillor Dean. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I've thought about it. Equity.
Excellent.
For everyone. Equity for everyone. So that's what I heard, equity for everyone. But it's not equitable for everybody, because if I'm on a high income and you're on a low income, I can make the choice to park all day long in the CBD, and somebody on a low income will have to make the choice to catch a bus or walk further or wake up earlier. So it's not equitable for everybody. Equitable for everybody would be if we banned parking all day in central Kingston CBD. That would be equitable for everybody. But this is not the proposal. The proposal is for potentially a modest fee. And my first thought there is, well, if it's a modest fee, that's not going to disincentivise parking in the CBD all day anyway, because even if you're on a low income, if it's only $5 a day, that's not a demand management tool if it's a modest fee. So it's a high fee. It's got to be a high fee, because otherwise it won't work as a demand management tool. So if it is a high fee, then that means that if you're on $200k a year, you paying $20 all day for parking won't matter and you'll still do it, but somebody on a low income or somebody on a pension or somebody who's, you know, trying to get to uni or TAFE, all of a sudden, they have to moderate their behaviour, but the person who's on high income, they don't have to moderate theirs. So if we are serious about being equitable for everybody, let's ban parking all day long for long stay in the CBD. And we could do that in a managed way, in a staged way. We're just talking about Skipper Lane here, the 240 parking spaces there. We could say, if we wanted to, okay, starting from 12 months' time, we'll make 50 of those bays timed. So they're no longer all-day parking. And then in another year, we'll make another 50 timed, so it's not all-day parking. And that would have exactly the same demand management effect on that car parking spot as making people pay for it. But we're not suggesting that. So are we full? That was the other question. Are we at full capacity? Well, no. If you look at the report, I'm looking now at page 40 of the report, on page 215 of my agenda. And no, it's only central Kingston CBD that is at capacity. The CBD periphery is not full. All the other places are not full. Now, this report is great because it's got all of this amazing information in it. The data is important. It's really good. And I went back to September of 2019 and listened to the audio when we actually deferred the parking discussion at that time. And one of the officers back in the day said, well, we're just asking for this to be noted. We're not actually asking for us to change anything. We just want you to note how good the information is in this report. And that I can totally agree with. There's a lot of good information in this report that we should use. But I don't know why we have to affirm the principle of paid parking as a demand management tool for the reasons that I outlined. I don't think it is as good a demand management tool as banning parking in the CBD. We need to, because and ultimately this is about whose demand are we managing. If we make people pay for parking at a modest rate or at a high rate, the person whose demand we're managing is the person without a lot of money. We're not managing the demand of people with lots of money. And I think that that is not equitable. I think that that is not fair. So that's what I think about it. And I think right now there's kind of three options that I see that we have. You maintain the status quo where you've got first in, best dressed, or you could adopt a staged approach like I just mentioned where you slowly but surely take away the parking and skip a lane and that changes people's demand, but it does so in an equitable way. Or you could make people pay, which I see is not fair for people on low incomes. We should be making these changes. I, of course, agree with the principle that people shouldn't be parking all day in the CBD, certainly not until we have a multi-storey car park. When we've got a multi-storey car park, if you're willing to pay for it, pay all day long, stay in the CBD and pay for it. I get that. But until we've got plans for a multi-storey, I don't want to be needlessly alarming the community. I don't think it's fair to make people on lower incomes disproportionately more disadvantaged than people on higher incomes. So if we're serious about equity for all, then let's talk about banning parking all day in the CBD. Let's not talk about just making people pay a little bit more for it. It's a cost of living crisis, and I don't want to slug people in Kingborough yet again with more costs. I just don't feel comfortable with that. Thank you, Mayor. I'll be voting against.
Thank you. Any further contributions? Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Bain and then Councillor Fox. You seem to have provoked some discussion there.
So can you help demystify something for me, Mayor? Councillor Cordova has inserted an amendment to this report and now he's going to vote against the report. Is that permitted?
Yes. There's nothing under the meeting procedures too.
In my opinion, we are dumber for having listened to all that.
Can I point of order? No, I won't.
I mean, seriously, Mayor, is it fair that the mover and the seconder has been duped by Councillor Cordova to amend a report
point, now a point of order.
That he's
have
actually...
Okay,
he's
sorry.
Actually moved
sorry. It. He won't okay. Okay. Councillor Cordova on a point of order.
the point of order, although I hate to use the technical term for the point of order, under the meeting procedures regulations, the technical term for this is offence. I'm not personally offended. I'm taking offence. You get what I'm saying?
By the word dupe?
I'm not duping people, and it's a character assassination to say that I'm duping people.
Okay. Are you asking Councillor Antoli to withdraw that?
If possible, yes, please.
Councillor Antoli, would you like to withdraw your comment that Councillor Cordova has taken offence to?
No, and I'll tell you why, because I'm offended. I want you to hear that I'm offended, that I would like an apology from Councillor Cordova to this entire chamber and everyone watching that he wasted our time to insert C into this report and then spoke against the report and is not even voting for the report. Surely that there is a rule about wasting time, deception or something that that can be brought to bear here. Am I the only person in Kingborough that feels that way?
I can understand, Councillor Antoli, what you're saying, but unfortunately the meeting procedures regulations don't cover any of what you've suggested. Councillor Cordova is able to propose an amendment that's been agreed to and then vote against a motion, just as he could have seconded it and still voted against it. It's a slightly grey area when it comes to the meeting procedures regulations, so unfortunately I can't sort of...
I want it on record. I condemn his actions for what he's done. He's wasted our time. He should have just shut up and voted against it and not wasted our time going through the ordeal and the theatrics of convincing the mover and the seconder, lesson learned mover and seconder, to accept his amendment that he then voted against the entire thing. And I just condemn it, and it just absolutely infuriates me that it's a waste of our time. I hope everyone that's listening sends him an email to that effect.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. I think next I had Councillor Bain and then Councillor Fox and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess given a lot of this focus is about auto parking, I think the key to a lot of it is understanding why people are parking in the CBD or all-day parking and what's preventing them utilising the other options. So for that reason, I'm very pleased to see a couple of the actions, which one's action number two, which talks about council working with private landowners to optimise the allocation of parking within private sites, including modifying short-stay parking restrictions if capacity exists to cater for greater staff parking demands on site. I think that's a great idea. If places like Channel Court might have some additional parking bays that they can give to their staff, that gives them another option. And the other one, a big one, is action number three, and that is council to work with the Department of State Growth to encourage the use of external park and ride facilities. Again, so we need to understand why people are choosing to use the CBD park and rides. Is it because there's more bus options in the CBD as opposed to the Huntingfield park and ride, or is it the congestion around the Algona roundabout? All things we should be having a discussion with State Growth about. Because while I'll be supporting this, I think we need to do everything we can to give the people that are using this better options. So if we can do that prior to implementing some paid parking, I think that'd be a great outcome. And I'm happy to hear that I think the intention is to tread slowly from the officer. So we're not going to just whack up a great big fee and start charging people. We'll tread slowly. The other question I just had is when it comes to big events over at Kingston Park, will there be an ability to, I guess, waive any fee on that car park and just let people park there?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, look, there's opportunity for anything when it comes down to that. I guess you would look at that and actually say if you're running an event there, you would probably just wouldn't be charging at that stage there if you wanted to utilise that car parking, say, Carols or something along those lines, if we decided to do that at some stage.
Thanks, that's good to hear, because I think that's important. We want to be encouraging people to use Kingston Park for big events, so we need to provide parking as well, because you see that car park's just chockers when there's a big event on. I'll be supporting the motion.
Thanks. Thank you. Before I go to Councillor Fox, just in relation to your comments about the encouragement of the park and ride, I use those facilities twice a week when I have to head into the city for work, and it amazes me that sometimes I can be on one of the buses with a handful of people, and I don't understand why they're not being used. I think the first side one is a bit of an issue, and particularly will get worse as we come into the colder months now, because it's not a park and ride, it's a park walk and ride. And particularly for anybody that's got a mobility issue, it is a huge problem. It's an uncovered walk across to from where you've got a park, right across, you've got to cross two roads, actually three. There's 3 points you have to cross after you get out of the park and ride to get to the bus stop, which isn't very safe, particularly now that we've not got daylight savings for those who are doing that in the evenings. I think one of the contributing factors, particularly for the Huntingfield Park and Ride, Councillor Midgley has already talked about the issues with bike storage facility there, which has not been ideal. And one of the other issues that is that a number of the buses from there were cancelled as part of Metro's supposed service realignment that were going to be reinstated in March, and those buses haven't reappeared. So if you then... there's one that goes sort of at the normal time that people would be going into the city, the Express one at 8 minutes past 8. But if you then come down to Kingston here, there is a double-length bus that is standing room only all the way to the city because it's more convenient for people to come down here. So until Metro can sort that out, I don't think we're going to see 100% utilisation of those park and rides. And I am very concerned about what's going to happen when or if the work starts on the additional lane on the southern outlet as to how people are going to get around and get into the city if they're not using public transport and starting to take that up now and get into the habit. So it's going to be a shock, I think. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess my major concern is that we don't have many buses in Kingborough at all. It's a rural suburb and a lot of outlying villages with no buses, like Howden, for example. There's one bus in the morning coming out and another bus at night, 5 o'clock, coming back in. And an ageing population, and people need to go shopping, they need to have somewhere to park. And I don't believe that we should be charging people to be parking short-term, for sure. But also, when it comes to long-term parking, it is no cost to council, other than the land that we own at the moment for the car park. I would support paid parking if we were to provide a high-rise car park that's dedicated and waterproof for people to park their car, for example, out of the rain and ice and snow in winter. But I don't think we should be charging people to be just parking in bare earth, which we have at the moment at the only car park we've got, really. I guess... they're my points. I agree with Councillor Cordova that there is a matter of equity here. It's difficult for us to be charging for car parking when basically a lot of people have to come into Kingston and we want to encourage them to go shopping here, and we need to encourage people who work in the CBD to have a safe place to park. But also it's going to cost us, I guess, to manage that. But we're already managing car parking at the moment along our streets. And I guess particularly for shop owners, we're managing their car parks, and that is a cost to the shop owners. So that's, I guess, an argument for actually... charging, but I think we've got a long way to go and we're not quite ready to do that because we don't have the excellent facilities that we should be providing. So in the end, I think I'll vote against the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, I had next, and then Councillor Dean.
That's okay.
Hang on, you've already spoken.
I was going to ask a question, but I'll say it in my summary. It's all good.
You can't ask a question in your summary. Okay. Councillor D.
Can I just ask a question? If we support this tonight, will there be paid parking in Kingston?
Mr. Reeve.
Next week? Next month?
No.
three mayors, not next week. As I mentioned before, one of the things that we would be doing is really just reaffirming the original decision as was in terms of actually going down the track of paid parking. I've already mentioned where we'd be likely to recommend we'd be putting that. But what we would be doing is actually putting that detail down into a council report, so I guess you get two bites of the cherry, so to speak, but it would be a waste of officers' time to go down that track if the Chamber wasn't supportive of actually investigating that.
Councillor Dean.
So we are providing in-principle support for a report that is very lengthy and, as Councillor Cotto has pointed out, is an excellent report, and we are endorsing that report. So I'm just wondering as to why some of the justification for not supporting this from my fellow councillors when the information we've just provided is that we are not providing not providing paid parking in Kingston next week. A question around equity. If some of the people aren't supporting this due to equity, a question, is it equitable that you start work half an hour later or an hour later and therefore miss out on a parking spot because everyone got in there first in best dressed, as Councillor Cordova has pointed out? Is that equitable?
I'm not sure who you're asking that to.
I like that answer.
Hmm?
I just like that answer.
You'd like it answered. I'm looking at Mr. Reeve. He's been in the hot seat all afternoon and into the evening as we stretch it.
Premier, I guess one way to answer that is to say that's the situation you've got at the moment. Mm. So anyone who ends up turning up there, in fact, it's probably worse because at the moment there may be people who don't take up that option to have to pay for their parking, which might mean there might be some extra spots for those people who do turn up half an hour later for work. So it probably would be a better situation rather than not. So I guess that's sort of partly answers your question.
Yeah, thanks. Look, I'm not going to waste anyone. I do agree, Councillor Antoi. I feel like my time has been wasted and I've just wasted everyone else's time slightly because this is just somewhat ridiculous, to be honest, in terms of what's been put forward. It's a great report. We're providing in-principle support. Let's move on.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley on a question?
Thank yes, hear it. So in regards to the recommendations and action plan, noting that there is 15 of them, how do we keep track of those and how do they come back to council in regards to sort of ticking them off and things?
Mr. Reeve.
It's fairly common for us to put up strategies there which have a whole list of actions that go through them. We don't normally come back and regularly say, here's our actions, we've done this one, done that one. Having said that, they do come up in other reports that come to council, so they might come up through quarterly reports, they might come up through our performance manager, which we track our KPIs through as well at the same time. So council do get to, I guess, look into how some of these things are going. The ones that we grab out, which is the reason why the very controversial paid parking is grabbed out of it, is those ones there where we do want council to be actively involved with, we do want them to be actively making a decision upon, and that's the reason why we pull them out of that process. And I think that one always will be pulled out of that. So even if we go down the track and we have a secondary report and even council agrees to that one, if we were then going to be making any changes from there, once again it would come back to council because it's that type of issue that needs to come back to council.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I will be voting in favour of this report with gritted teeth for all the reasons that I've shared before. I feel that I'm disgusted that we have had time wasted on trying to make something fairer, clearer, better, which is why you move an amendment, and then you don't even want to support it. So it would have been just better if we just stick with A and B, and I don't even think we needed to go through the whole rigmarole and theatrics of C in there. So I will be... it's noted to the mover and seconder. Be careful who you allow an amendment to... who you pass an amendment to.
and be wise in the time spent. So I'll be voting for it, but with gritted teeth, as I've shared. The report's excellent, and it's a fair report, and paid parking is a valid method of making parking fairer. I don't care about equity, because you can rabbit on about that, about who's earning more money compared to someone else.
Councillor,
the spirit of envy is not needed.
You have actually made your contribution already, so I'm hoping there's a
question. No, because I had a question around a procedure and order and about the amendment itself. That was discussion before.
Okay.
This is actually my contribution.
Okay.
Thank you. But I'll leave it at that for now, Mayor, and I appreciate the indulgence to let me contribute.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question, just in case people are still watching, for clarity.
I reckon they're not.
Just in case.
If you reckon anyone's watching this for clarity, you're
possibly
that's
not.
The most hilarious thing I've heard all night.
We've spoken about the Skipper Lane car park a fair bit, and my question is the long-term plan for that to be a car park, or I guess in the long term, will that actually be something else?
So longer term, that part of that will be something else. That will be a commercial building.
Yeah, thanks. So I guess anything we're talking about here is, I guess, short term.
Yep, so the Skipper Lane car park was always intended only to be a short term solution to parking while Kingston Park was developed. But as you'll be aware from the signs up there and previous decisions that this council has made, that is part of the site for the new commercial development that hopefully there will be a tenant for.
Thanks. Hopefully I haven't wasted anybody's time.
Okay. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up? Because I'd really like you to.
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
So, in summary, I would, yes, like to thank everybody for the contribution. And in regards to the question, the hot topic that we've got tonight, I feel absolute assurance that this is not a final decision regarding paid parking in Kingston, that we support in principle as we did in the 2020 or something when it was, that anything further will come to council and be scrutinised and have conversations, we'll have the dealings and understanding, and that's not going to happen next week. That's probably going to take quite a while of time actually to do the investigation around that. Also to note that that recommendation is part of, on page 82 in this 100-page report, the recommendations and action plan, which Councillor Bain talked about a few, I discussed a few, some other councillors mentioned a few. I'm not going to read those all, but before anyone jumps to any final hysterical moment about this, read all of the action plans in regards to this, because we are looking, as well as I stated, like a modal shift. We want to encourage different ways. We want to combat our congestion. We want to look at different ways that we can go. We want to look at that equity. We want to look at those park and rides that we've got and look at the barriers as to why people aren't using them. We want to make it shared and, I guess, and equal for all, and make sure that everyone can kind of have a spot where they need to. So nothing further will happen drastic in regards to without consultation for our community. But we need to do this. We're changing. We're growing. We've got to change and grow with how times are. So I support the motion. Support the amendment that's been put forward, and thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Councillor Midgley. I'm going to put the recommendation now. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Dean. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
Aye.
Show of hands is required. All those in favour? Councillor Antoli, do you want to put your hand up? Sorry, that wasn't an order, that was a question. Is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Gladewright and Reet, and those against? Councillor Cordova, the motion is carried. I'm going to call a short break, because I think we could all do with one after that, and we can get our heads nice and clear, and we'll be back in about 6 or 7 minutes. So for those who are watching at home, apologies while we just have a comfort break. Thank you. Yep. Okay, welcome back. Thank you for your patience while we just had a brief break. We are now on page 273, Audit Panel Charter, with a recommendation on the following page, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Fox.
I just think it's a good idea that the recommendations come from the audit panel, that they review the annual review of the charter included a recommendation that its terms of reference be expanded to include the review of the long-term financial management plan as it's aligned with the annual budget. And I think that would be an appropriate thing for us to accept. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? If not, I will put the recommendation. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Next item, 16.4, appointment to audit panel. With a recommendation on page 292. The recommendation is, however, just that somebody, we're looking for a nominee, so I'll call for nominees for that before we move it. Councillor Fox?
I would like to nominate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other nominations? Okay, so I would like to nominate as well. Any other nominations? We will have to take a vote. And perhaps I'll hand over the chair to you, Deputy Mayor. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, wow, these look official.
So once he says who's won, you've got to make that as part of the recommendation that such and such be appointed. Get a mover and a seconder for that, and then you need to propose a motion, get a mover and a seconder that the ballot papers be destroyed.
Okay.
The mayor has been the mayor wins the outcome of the vote.
Thank you.
Okay, so the motion is that council resolve to appoint Councillor Reet to the audit panel, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Wow. Moved Councillor Antoli, seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried. And now we need to move another motion that the ballot papers be destroyed. So I'm looking for a mover. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
And against? Motion is carried.
Thank you very much.
Could I ask a question on indulgence? Could I just
sure.
Thank Deputy Mayor Gladewright for her term of service on the panel. I'm sure that it came at a cost. It's a lot of hours. I just wanted to express that on behalf of all of your colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That takes us now to page 293, Timber Aquatic Facility Steering Committee, with a recommendation on page 295. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. So I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
I just thought we were rolling as we did with the previous one, but I'm moving that we appoint a councillor to the chairperson of this committee, but also the committee, I guess, is something that has come out of the sport and recreation strategy. Mayor, am I right to talk a bit more about this, or we're just going to appoint?
Sure.
Okay.
No.
So for those who are listening or interested, it's a direct, I guess, alignment in regards to the sport and recreation strategy that we had serious consultation last year, also convened by Councillor Dean, and a number of key stakeholders in the community sat on that. Controversially to some, and very supportive of some, there is movement forward and a vision for an aquatic centre facility in Kingborough. Personally, I'm not aligned 100% with this, but I guess it was the Sport and Rec Committee and the findings from the community that would like to this move forward. It's been a discussion in our community for quite a number of years. Like we've just committed to last time, this does not mean it is going to happen in Kingborough. The committee will oversee all of the details in regards to what this actually looks like for Kingborough, and the biggest thing that we all know is the cost implication that needs to be carefully scrutinised, people need to have a voice about, and that will draw expertise, as is outlined in the report. We do an EOI for people who are on the community. That will be a number of highly skilled professionals with expertise in this space to really thoroughly look at that. And that will then be a process, I guess, that, as identified in the report, that will go on for. We don't really know how long it will go on for, because it's quite a big thing to really consider, a massive thing for our community, massive health benefits as well. I totally recognise this, but a massive financial output for the community. So I guess it's a long-term vision. We're hearing the voices of the community, and so we're adhering to that, and therefore that's what this motion that I'm supporting to tonight. And as part of that, we'll be appointing a council representative as a chairperson of the committee, and then we'll advertise for expressions of interest, as it says there, in point B, from appropriately qualified, experienced community members. So it's moving things along so things don't stay stagnant, but it does not lock us into anything at all.
Thank you. Councillor Bain. Oh, sorry, Councillor Gladrow, I beg your pardon.
I must say I'm a little bit worried about the wording in this. The recommendation does say endorses the establishment of a project steering committee to progress the development of, and that makes it sound like it actually really is happening, and I'm just concerned that we are setting up an expectation that this is happening, and I'm wondering if we need to manage the expectations a little bit better, and if that wording should be something more like explore the feasibility or something to that effect. So I'm not sure what other councillors think about that, but I am slightly concerned. I also just wanted to ask whether councillors are able to attend these committee meetings in the capacity as of observers, and if we should have two councillors on the committee as well.
So, funny you should say that. I believe that I do think that that's actually an error in this, that we should have two council representatives. We do on all our other sort of advisory groups or steering committees. So I understand that Councillor Bain was going to move an amendment and seek the indulgence of the mover and seconder as to whether that would be appropriate. Is that right, Councillor Bain, or did I just put words in your mouth?
Oh, that is correct, Mayor. Thank you.
So, yes, that's certainly where we'd be going as this. So we'd be looking for two nominees as a chairperson and then a deputy chairperson, because I think that sort of future-proofs us. If the chair is unable to be there, then we've still got a councillor who's chairing the committee.
And what about observers?
Oh, I can't imagine that there's anything to stop. So there's nothing to stop councillors attending in an observer capacity.
Okay, so I'm just interested then to know if other councillors share my concern around the wording, or if I just let that one go.
Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova.
In discussion?
No, we're not in discussion. Nobody moved to discuss. This is it. Ask question time. We've got to get our... we haven't got to see yet as to who wants to nominate, so Councillor Ntoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I understand where Deputy Mayor Gladride is coming from. But it's talking about progressing the development. Look, I am for us having a pool. I think it'd be a great idea if we can fund it. And if we're progressing to get there and it's feasible and fundable, all the more power to us. But I understand what you're trying to say because it almost gives people the impression we will make it work and we have no guarantee that it can work because of the massive implication cost. I think from memory we would have to raise our rates by something like 1.5% or something to fund this. If I've got that right, there was some sort of comment that we'd have to raise our rate considerably just to cope with this. If we were to just fund it outright with our own rates, maybe it's far more than that. So I'm happy to progress with the development of an aquatic facility, but that word progress is the big if, isn't it? How do we progress it? And if we can't, how do we get out of it?
Did you want that question answered in relation to the percentage of the rate rise that would be required?
Otherwise I'm putting false information out there, so maybe someone can correct the record.
Yeah, it's just me.
Through you, Mayor, the quantum of the rate rise will obviously depend on the nature of the facility and what it costs us and what it costs to run. However, the feasibility study that was done 2 years ago proposed a facility of some $40 million and said that the operating deficit, including the depreciation, of the facility that was recommended in that report was 3%.
Councillor Dean.
Can I make a suggestion to potentially ease the Deputy Mayor's concerns, which are valid, that we maybe just change progress to explore?
I think that's probably... I have to say, I share those concerns because I think we need to be... I don't want to... I think I famously said this once before about I don't want to wake up tomorrow and see in the Mercury that we're building a pool, and I woke up the next day and I did see that we were building a pool. So if you're listening, Mercury, I don't want to read that. We are not building a pool at the moment. We're going to explore the development of an aquatic facility in Kingborough because of the desire of the community for us to have a look at this again, as came up at our sport and rec strategy redevelopment. So... would the mover and seconder be amenable to exchange the word progress to explore? Councillor Ntoli and Councillor Midgley, thank you very much. We'll change that word. Okay, so back on, I probably at this point would like to call for nominations for... now, how do we do this now that we've got two positions? Councillor. So we'll have to have two separate votes. Or the one with the most votes become the chair and the... If there's only two nominees. Two separate votes. Okay. Let's have two separate votes. So I'm calling for nominees as the chairperson of the committee. Councillor Cordova and Councillor Dean. Is there anyone else? Okay. We will distribute some ballot papers. Thank you. Okay, yeah, we'll come back.
So while they're being counted, we will need to... I should have asked Councillor Midgley and Councillor Antoli as the mover and the seconder. Are you happy that we amend C to read appoints Councillor as chairperson of the committee and appoints Councillor as deputy chair?
Yes. I'm just not sure about that word development. That's my only thing.
Sorry, beg your pardon?
The wording of development, if we're moving that one. Did you say that one, A?
No, we've...
No, explore the development. I'm just saying development because it feels like we're still developing, like idea, maybe, instead of development.
Searching. Okay. Do we have a...
The vote was won by Councillor Dean.
Thank you. So Councillor Dean be appointed as chairperson. And then do we have nominees for the deputy chair?
No, thank you. I'll just be an observer.
Okay. Councillor Bain, any other nominees? No? Okay. Then Councillor Bain as deputy chair of the committee. Okay. Now that we've got that wrapped up, who would like to make some contributions to the debate? No, that's it.
I'd like to add something.
Councillor,
I'd like to congratulate Councillor Dean and Councillor Bain, who I'm sure will do an excellent job walking the minefield of what they've just put their hand up to. And we will support them from a distance.
Councillor Bain and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of things in the report that I like the sound of. One is some of the avenues that the committee can explore, like this may include reducing the scope of the facility, developing the project in discrete stages, or determining innovative management models that reduce the operating expenditure. The other great thing from the report, I thought, is some of the skill sets which we're asking for as part of the committee, so people that are involved in aquatic centre operations, facility development planning, design and construction, etc., etc. I think these are all the sort of the skill sets that we want sitting around the table. And I think what will hopefully come from this is to show the community that we've explored every possible option, and then the result will be what the result is. But at least we can say we've tried everything and come back to the community and say, here's how we finished up. So look forward to seeing how we go.
Thank you, Councillor Dean, and then Councillor Cordova.
I put my hand up because I felt impelled, having served as chair of the sport and rec community, and the feedback is absolutely clear. We all know people of Kingborough would like some kind of pool facility. We need to keep that alive. As Councillor Baines pointed out, it's definitely not going to happen overnight. But look, I would just point out the example of the sports centre. It's another facility that we've been trying our guts out to get improved with extra courts. We went back to the drawing board, came up with a slightly reduced or a different proposal, which did get uptake in the last election, didn't come to fruition, but hopefully that is, within the next couple of years, matched and we get somewhere. And that shows that if we look at and explore multiple options, what is clear in the report, as Officer Smee has pointed out, that the original facility is a $40 million facility, which clearly we can't afford at this point. But if we can come up with multiple options, take it to each election cycle, and the point about time here is critical, because it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to happen at an election period that happens every 4 years or so in Tasmania. So if it doesn't happen in 4 years, it might be 8, it might be 12. The sports centre took many, many years to get up and off the ground. So we are keeping the idea alive through this facility, through this committee, sorry. I'm very looking forward to being a part of it, but I understand it's a long-term commitment, and I'm really hopeful that we do explore it in a way that encompasses and empowers the community. The report, actually, as it's written, is fantastic. It makes it very, very clear that this is not going to just be an opportunity for those in the community who are passionate about wanting a pool, but it's going to make people, it's going to ask for people with the relevant skill sets to put their hand up and contribute in a way that's productive. Whether that comes out, as Councillor Bain has pointed out, anytime soon, it would be nice, as Councillor Antalvi's point out, to have one. I think we'd all agree on that, but we'd obviously want to make sure that it's financially feasible, and I'm very realistic about the prospect of that. It does need to be financially feasible for us as a council, and we need to clearly get state or federal funding to get off the ground. We clearly need to look at alternative models, whether that's a reduced size, as Councillor Baines pointed out, or a completely different model at all, where private partnership is involved. Whatever it is, we need to absolutely explore every opportunity for this to become a reality. Even if it is in 20 years, I hope that it does happen, and I'm looking forward to being involved with this, and I appreciate my fellow councillors for giving me the support to act as the chairperson, and I welcome any councillor to come along for when it gets off and running to observe and see what we do, and I really hope that we can make a really good crack at trying to get the community involved and get some really high caliber applicants, whether they're from Kingborough or not. We need that is critical to this. It is not going to be me or staff alone that makes this come about. It is going to be a joint effort from all involved. So fingers crossed, at some point in the future we may have some more options before us that get some uptake from one of the major parties. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. And at the outset, let me make it very clear that the people of Kingborough unequivocally want an aquatic centre. I unequivocally want an aquatic centre. We deserve one because of the size of the catchment that we'll be serving. We've got a lot of great data and a lot of great information already. We've got that sea leisure feasibility study. We really do know a lot, so there's a lot of information to work with. So at the outset, certainly congratulations to Councillor Dean and Councillor Bain, and especially thanks to Councillor Dean for making that invitation to fellow councillors really abundantly clear. I look forward to observing those meetings and contributing where I can. And I think this is a job for all of us, not just sitting around this table, but in the community and in the council to really lean in and make this happen. I wanted to make the point that I'm disappointed that we've changed the term to explore the development, because we've been exploring the development of a facility, of an aquatic facility, for about 40 years. I've certainly door-knocked in Kingston and heard a story about somebody saying, oh, and I think it was in the early 1980s, there was a program to buy a brick for a Kingston pool. I mean, we don't need to explore the possibility of having an aquatic centre. We need one for Kingborough because we're of a size that makes it reasonable that we would have one. So we actually need progress on this, not just to explore it. I think people do get irritated by just massive talk fests and commissioning another feasibility study, you know, and just going on and on around in circles, when people actually just want somewhere where their kids can learn to swim, somewhere where they can go for recreation, health and well-being. People in this municipality deserve a pool. So I really like how it does talk about modular options, discrete stages, future expansion. You know, we don't need to. Rome wasn't built in a day, and as long as we have an idea of future expansion, we can actually develop something. We can progress development, not just explore development, but progress it and have something actual tangible where we. I want it to be within my lifetime. I want it to be soon. I want it to be within this decade that we have an aquatic facility in Kingborough. I don't think it's too much to ask. I think we should engage local businesses because there's a huge economic multiplier effect that can take place where, you know, there'll be local cafes, there'll be potentially cafe operators depending on what model we look into, and I'm particularly interested in what the ownership model becomes. I'm oftentimes fearful of public-private partnerships. I think that council, because we're a service organisation, we're not here to make a profit, we're here to help the community, so I'll be really interested to see the analysis on what the on what the options are for an ownership model and an operational model. And also I think we need a reserve fund set aside that says aquatic facility on it. That is money set aside, just like we have an infrastructure fund here in Kingborough where we set aside money for infrastructure. We need to have an aquatic facility reserve fund where even if we don't put any money in, we would put a tiny amount of money in it this year because we're in a parlous financial state, but we need to be putting money aside for the ongoing operations and depreciation and maintenance, and hopefully we get government grants for the construction, the capital works, but we should have set aside an amount of money that grows every year so that we don't come back in the year 2042 and say, we've been exploring an aquatic facility for 60 years now, but we never put aside a chunk of money that grew year by year by year, a reserve account in our books that said aquatic facility. So I'm a strong advocate for that. I think that yeah, getting together all the experts and people with their heart in the right place, this will be good. The people of Kingborough want an aquatic facility, and I look forward to progress being made on an aquatic facility for Kingborough. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I have a few questions. In regards to, say, the EOI, kind of what it looks like, the skills and things like that, would that be provided to the appointed councillors before it's put out to the community?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it can be, if that's what the appointed councillors want.
Thank you. Just thought they could be involved at the beginning of the process for that. And what if, say, we put it out there and we don't get many nominations, we don't get the kind of skill set that had been identified in the report? What sort of compromise will we make?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I think if we're not getting uptake, then we'd need to look at how we're advertising, and I suspect we might need to do some targeted appointments so that we're actually getting the skill set that we need, because I think, as has already been mentioned, you know, we know there's lots of people in the community that want to pull, but this committee really does need people that can bring a skill to the table to help that exploration process.
Thank you. And have we had any conversation with other councils, perhaps across Tasmania or interstate, in regards to sort of the process that they've done, any learnings or insight from that, or we're just at that beginning, even in New Zealand, for example?
Well, I think we are very well placed at the moment now, because you'll notice that the CEO is listed as being part of the steering committee, and he has extensive experience in managing aquatic facilities in his former role. So I don't know whether you'd like to add anything to the debate. Oh, it's okay.
Okay. Thank you. And just one further question.
I'm not sure that was an optional question, but that's okay. Moving on.
Another further question, final question. Do we see any costs associated with any aspects of this committee?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, look, potentially there may be. You know, we may need costs to do design work. There may be costs associated with engaging specific expertise. But it's too early to say at this stage, and I need to come back to council with a specific budget request if we did get to the point where those are real costs that we need to progress forward.
Thank you. So we're not sort of predicting any light items in the next budget regarding this. We'll just sort of go play it by ear, I guess. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Any further discussion? Councillor Bain.
Sorry, just a question, Mayor. Interested to know whether, I guess, the opinion of the finance manager is the council's in a financial position, to be able to put money aside every year in a pool reserve fund.
The Director of People and Finance.
Through you, Mayor. My preference would be, if we wanted to do this, to create the revenue stream, which inevitably have to be through the rates, in order to generate the surplus, to generate the reserve, would be my answer.
Councillor Bain, is there a follow-up?
So I gather that response was it would have to come from additional rates to be able to put money into a reserve fund. Is that correct?
Correct.
Correct. Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question is about even if there wasn't a large amount of money that we could put aside, even if there wasn't extra revenue raised in the near term specifically for it, is there utility in having a mechanism to set aside money specifically for a pool? As in, my question is, isn't it useful to be able to earmark fund, to set aside funds in the same way that we do with an infrastructure fund. We don't have to put a certain amount of money into the infrastructure fund every year, do we? We just have that kind of column on the accounts so that we have a space for it.
So you have an empty space.
Well, hopefully it wouldn't be empty forever.
I think I'll let Mr. Spinks handle this one.
Mayor, we could certainly create the process, so we could certainly mirror the current process we have for the Infrastructure Replacement Fund, but my strong suspicion would be it's going to be a little bit of time before we'd be in a position to put any funds into it, because we're already making deficits. We're forecasting more, so I think our ability to start putting funds into it without associated rate increases would be very limited.
Any further questions? Okay, so we've filled in the gaps of the appointees through the ballot. So I've got movers in Councillor Midgley and Councillor Antoli, so I'm going to put that motion. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I also need then a mover and a seconder that the ballot papers be destroyed. I've got that in Councillor Gladewright and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? It is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 298, Kingaroo Bicycle Advisory Committee Deputy Chairperson, with a recommendation on page 299. The recommendation is that we're actually asking for a nominee. Do I have any nominees? I've got a nominee in Councillor Bain, who's nominated himself, and Councillor Midgley has nominated him by pointing at him. Got to be careful here. You didn't even notice that she was... do I have any further nominees? If not, we'll fill in Councillor Bain's name there. Thank you very much, Councillor Bain. And I'll look for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 300. Page 300. Mover and a seconder that the appendices has been received and noticed. And noted. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved Councillor Gladewright, seconded Councillor Midgley. Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions in regards to the audit report. The comments regarding the internal audit recommendations tracker says substantial work required in some areas and time to address these, and comment re-compliance with the Emergency Management Act 2006 and that other councils are undertaking review to ensure compliance. Can we have any information in regards to the substantial work required in some areas and the time to address these kind of point, and also the compliance regarding the Emergency Management Act and what other councils are doing and what we kind of need to do?
Mr. Spinks.
Through you, Mayor, I'll just tackle the second one first. So goes back to last year. We had Wise Lord Ferguson do a review, which we did jointly with Huon Valley Council, to assess our compliance with the Tasmanian Emergency Management Act. The results of that review were positive and good, so we were in compliance. It's certainly an emerging space, and the role of councils in all things emergency management is sort of a bit of a vexed question in many ways. Having led the way and had that review done, we were told by Wise Lord that a number of other councils are now following suit and sort of having similar reviews done. I think our task is around, and we're probably better off than most councils because we do have some resourcing in this space, emergency management and community recovery. A lot of councils don't have any, so I think we're probably better off than most, but our task is now to sort of, I suppose, really articulate what our role is in this space and then resource it. The first question, so the tracker obviously follows the outstanding recommendations from recommendations or reviews done in, previously. There's a couple of sort of meaty ones there. I think the primary one is the strategic asset management review that was that report was tabled to the panel in December. And at the February meeting, one of the panel members did query the organisation's ability to progress some of these recommendations in reasonable timeframes. My response at the time was I probably shared that concern. We have heard that we have some resource constraints. We've sort of heard that through the budget process, and my opinion would be that this is probably one of the areas of the business that does suffer from that.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question about the disability... the Inclusion and Access Committee minutes. Yes, so my question is around... I'm looking at the bottom of page 309 about sub-minimum wages, and this is kind of a two-pronged question. My first correspondence was received for seeking support for changes to regulations which allow for sub-minimum wages to be paid to people with disability, particularly when employed in a disability enterprise. Discussion took place, da-da-da. The proposal was put to a vote and the committee voted 6 in favour and 2 against, and the Mayor will write in support of the campaign on behalf of the committee. That was the resolution. So the first part of my question is I'm just not particularly familiar with this area. It sounds like it potentially could be contentious and maybe have some reputational consequence, considering that it wasn't even a unanimous vote. So I guess the first part of my question is what's the rationale behind supporting it? And the second part of my question is, if a letter's going out on behalf of the committee, doesn't that need to come before council to check that the council actually supports the committee going out with that correspondence?
Yep. So it wasn't actually a letter, that's incorrect. It was we were asked to sign a petition. I signed that as an individual and then I circulated it to the advisory committee to ask whether any members would like to sign it personally, and then I listed it for discussion. And the discussion around whether we... because there was the option, because the petition was started by somebody in Queensland, I think, from memory. And there was the option of signing up as an organisation. And so I wasn't willing to do that unless I had first spoken to the advisory committee and then it would have come back here. It was the opinion of two members of the advisory committee that it should be an individual response and that we don't collectively respond. It wasn't a reflection on the issue. It is quite a complex issue, but essentially somebody with a disability can be employed for a very, very, very sub-minimum hourly wage. And it's something that's been a long-standing issue that is quite complicated when you think about social enterprises and that sort of thing. So the decision in the end, after some discussion, was that members would just sign the petition themselves and not as a collective.
Okay, thank you. That's reasonable. Thank you.
Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, I've probably got the most boring question ever. But
well,
why
try and surprise me.
Appendix E, councillor attendance at meetings 1 January to 31 March, then gives us the workshop and attendance for the whole year, not 1st of January. So I've, to be honest, only just picked up on that because someone pointed out to me that I don't attend many workshops. So why is it that if it shouldn't it say 1st of July to 31st of March?
Why would we be reporting for that period of time? That's a bit weird. Should be July.
It should say July. See, I told you it was boring. Thanks.
I don't know. I've heard worse. Thank you. Apologies for that error. Any other questions, comments? No. Okay. I'm going to put the motion moved by Councillor Gladright, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Notice of motion. There were no notices of motion at the time the agenda was compiled. So now we're at confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and rates delegated authority March 2024. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Gladright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. So this brings us to the end of the open session of Council. Thank you very much to everyone who's been watching along at home. In accordance with Kingborough Council's meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. And that has adjourned at 8:36 p.m. Closed session of Council now commences.